It is 5:30 on Tuesday, October 9th, 2021. Calling the meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. Roll call of members.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Dave McKenna. Dave McKenna.
Was he? There he is.
Glenn Morey.
Here.
Martha Robertson.
Here.
Leslie Shaw.
Here.
Mike Sigler. Shauna Black.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Here. Henry Granison.
Here.
Rich John.
Here.
Dan Fine.
Here.
Ann Corman.
Present.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne.
Present.
First present.
Thank you. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. Are there no proclamations today, and you would have received any communications or notices in your mailbox. Just to let you know, legislators, that we will have an executive session this evening, hopefully brief, for the purposes of negotiations. And now I'm going to move on to privilege of the floor for the public. And we do have a few people who have signed up. In the order that I received, first up is Tom Corey.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm Tom Corey from the Village of Dryden. Talk tonight about equity in the time of COVID. So beginning in early 2020, the federal government began to distribute billions of dollars into the economy to help stabilize the economy in the wake of COVID-19 shutdowns and labor unrest. Beginning with the $600 and $1,200 grants that were made to individuals, and also including the generous SBA programs, PPP, and small loan programs with a $10,000 forgiveness, nearly every business and not-for-profit for Tompkins County received some funding, generous funding. In Tompkins County alone, it exceeds over $100 million. Later, as you probably know, restaurants and hospitalities had a special grant program, and closed venue program was established for theaters and traditional theaters and movie theaters. Now, I dare say that virtually every business, whether for-profit or not-for-profit in Tompkins County, has been granted funds. And I've looked at the list, and I'm sure those of you probably have too, and it's extensive. Now, the Tompkins County is retaining a $55 million unallocated budget reserve, significantly in excess of what's required by state law, near basically 25% of the budget, in excess of the 10% that's recommended by the comptroller. And I'm here to ask the Tompkins County to do the appropriate and equitable thing, also the thing which is recommended by the state, and return a large portion of those funds to the people from which it came, the property taxpayers of Tompkins County. All of them, equitably, the rich, the poor, all races, all religions, all classes. An equitable method is the most equitable method of returning some of those excess taxes, because that budget reserve is, in fact, the collection of excess taxes. 25% of the reserve, which would be, let's say, around $15 million, would create something in the range of a tax levy reduction of nearly 30%, and would be well received by those who have been in the middle and have not necessarily received as generous a grant as some small businesses and some not-for-profits. And they are the ones, after all, that pay taxes. It would be an appropriate and equitable method, and it would take some consideration of the people who have been striving under very difficult circumstances during COVID. So, one time, give the taxpayers of Tompkins County a break. One time, equity, the way it was meant to be. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Corey. Next on my list is Lawrence Lyon.
Thank you very much. I am a transplant, 1993 arrival in Tompkins County, first time to the chambers. Privileged to be here, privileged to have an opportunity to comment. My grandfather was a cowpoke in Colorado, moved to California, and was a crack shot, trained a number of police forces, and national revolver champion for a couple of years, trained my grandmother, and with two others, were a national four, quote, man team as well. I just recently took a basics of pistol shooting class and had my range time, was surprised to hear the extremely limited resources that the County Sheriff's Department has for requalification with firearms. We know that in another part of the country, an officer pulled what she thought was her taser, pulled her firearm instead with disastrous consequences. Really, I have found that it needs to be a reflexive, well-trained, requalified officers who have muscle memory. It's very important. I encourage the county to allocate some of those many funds just mentioned to that particular part of the sheriff's budget so that we can have countywide the kind of ready, qualified officers that we want and we deserve. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Lyon. Next up is Zachary Wynn.
Good evening. My name is Zachary Wynn. I'm here to ask the members of the members of the legislature to speak out against the state, federal, and local mask and vaccine requirements that are being issued in addition to the ones here at the legislature and imposed by private businesses, especially for their own employees. There is a major labor shortage, especially in the service industries, and the masks are part of that. I've discovered that it's virtually impossible to find a job that does not require a mask or a vaccine, with one local temp agency telling me they have literally no jobs available to anyone who is unvaccinated and will be forced to terminate many who are not vaccinated come the 8th of December. I believe this entire affair with COVID has gone on too long, and there's no end in sight. A more pressing public health crisis can be found on State Street at the Stat Building, an open-air drug market in Skid Row where people routinely die of overdoses and are stabbed. There are real crises that need addressing, the routine gunfire, drug activity, and an erosion of quality of life in Tompkins County. And COVID is not one of those crises. This is an instance of the cure being worse than the disease. And that's all I have. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Wynn. Next up is Faye Gugagas. Hi, Faye.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I also, I become very disillusioned and frustrated by the governance of our county and our city. I've been here so many times talking about issues that nobody does anything about. The city was trying, Bike Walk Tompkins was trying to bring back another company like Lime. And I feel like I'm the only person that opposed it. Okay? I can't get a radio slot. I can't get interviewed by the media, local media. Nobody wants to hear my side of the story. I had a letter that was, thank God, published in the Ithaca Times a couple weeks ago, but I don't have any support. I've been a lifelong bicyclist. Nobody has asked me, you know, personally called up and said, hey, what is your experience? I'm concerned about that. Nobody here has called me. Nobody from the city certainly has called me. People in the city, several council people do not return my calls. They even publicly admitted to that when I raised that concern at the council meeting. Okay? That's not how you run government. That's not public service, which I take very seriously. And safety for me is very serious. Okay? When I came to Ithaca in 1982, there was a strong women's movement. It was the tail end of the women's movement. Okay? Women cared for each other's safety. That's thrown out of the window now in this county. Okay? Somehow, safety equals racism. Safety equals oppression. I'll be the first one not to support that. Okay? I have very high morals, okay? Safety does not equal racism, okay? And I see so many examples of that in Ithaca, if you raise a certain concern. Or let's take the line bikes. Oh, I'm against bicycling? Don't you think that's a joke? The person before me, even though I didn't agree with one of the things he talked about, the vaccine, but the quality of life in Ithaca is going down. I live it every day. There's disrespect. One of the reasons I came here tonight is the tinted windows. I came here a couple years ago and I showed you a picture of the tinted windows, the manufacturers. Why aren't we giving money to the police? Who's looking at that? We have so many cars now speeding, and we have tinted windows galore. That is, we have a law in New York State against tinted windows where you can't see what the person is doing. It's like a monster. It's like death coming at me. That's how it feels every time. I can't see the person. And nobody is doing anything about it. And I am pissed off. Quality of life does not equal something bad. Quality of life is good for everybody in this community. But we've destroyed that. And I'm sorry, but I have no one to turn to. My calls aren't being returned. I never thought government in this community would stoop so low. So I appreciate you listening to me, but please do something. It is very scary to see a vehicle coming at you where you don't know what the person is doing. And that eye communication is important, whether you're a bicyclist, a pedestrian, or even when you're driving. If I knew how to drive, I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't want to make contact and see what the person's doing. Most people are doing this, believe it or not, because I try to look really hard to see what they're doing.
Thank you, Faye. We
But please, please, thank give you. Some money to, you know, monitoring this, because it's important. Really getting out of control.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Safety.
I know I went over. I'm really sorry.
Right. Don't be sorry.
But,
it's okay.
But I appreciate you respecting my voice. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Safety is indeed important. I don't have any other cards, and I don't think there's anyone else who is signed up. Do we have any municipal officials with us tonight? I don't see anybody on screen. If you are, reveal yourself. Nope. Okay. No one joining us tonight. That's all right. Budget, and people have all kinds of meetings happening and deliberations and so on, so we can respect that. Legislators' privilege of the floor, very quickly, and then I want to get to a special appointment. Dan Klein?
Yeah, I just wanted to I guess, respond. I know we're not supposed to really respond to something that somebody said. I feel like some wrong numbers were given out during privilege of the floor. And so I just want to say to the public what my understanding of the real numbers are. The fund balance that the county has, the unallocated fund balance, as of right about now, is approximately $41.6 million, which is considerably lower than was mentioned earlier. And the speaker also said that 10% of the budget is recommended for fund balance by the state controller. I'm not sure what the controller's recommendation is, but there is a professional organization of treasurers, municipal treasurers, and their recommendation is 18%, I believe, 16-18%, and that's what we recently reset our fund balance policy as. So I just wanted to make sure that those real numbers are out there. I don't completely disagree with what the speaker was saying, but it's important to have numbers accurate. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan, for clarifying. Martha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple things about voting. Early voting starts Saturday. And congrats and thanks to our Board of Elections people who work really hard to get these dates set up. And I'll just say it's Saturday 9 to 2, and there are two places people can vote. Wherever you live in the county, you can either go to the Ithaca Town Hall on Tioga Street or the Crash Fire and Rescue Building, 72 Brown Road. Just tell them where you live. You'll get the right ballot. So Saturdays and Sundays, et cetera, all the way through Halloween, people can vote early. And I encourage folks to turn your ballot over. There are five ballot proposals, statewide ballot proposals, on the back side of the ballot. So I hope people will make sure to take a look at those. There's been question about ballot proposal number one about apportionment and redistricting. I was on the phone today with a staff person in Senator Giannaris' office, and he said the gist of number one of the first ballot proposal is it will significantly improve the calendar because we have a June primary. The petitioning for offices for the primary, the petitioning for offices happens in February. So if ballot measure number one passes, it'll help significantly with the calendar in order to get the new district lines established in time for petitioning. So hope people consider that. One other item, I was also got a call today from Jared Jones in Senator Gillibrand's office. He came to our Tiger meeting last week. I just wanted to mention, I asked him about the earmark proposals that were requested by a number of agencies and organizations in Tompkins County. We were asked in the spring to submit, to look for projects that might be eligible for earmarks. He said within the next day or two they should know. He will be able to get the list of the projects that were that have been moved forward in their budget process. So Lisa's nodding. I don't know. I don't think Tompkins County government applied for any earmarks, did we? No, okay. But some of our best friends did. All right, so I'll pass it on. Thank you.
Thanks, Martha. Anyone else? Mike Lean?
I want to say thank you to Dan for correcting those incorrect numbers that we heard this evening. Thank goodness we have a strong fund balance in Tompkins County. We've just decided that 18% is a reasonable amount to have. I can remember times when we had very, very small fund balances and we had to raise taxes even more. Our fund balance this year will be used for lots of different things. We've allocated $7 million into a recovery program that will be used for programs and applicants from not-for-profits or others who have been hurt by the COVID crisis and need some support from the county. We've allocated $1 million from fund balance to reduce taxes. Money that we hope we won't have to come up with again, double dip next year. We hope that the sales tax and other things will help us recover that figure. We never know when we're going to have a crisis come. Having a strong fund balance allows us to get through difficult times without having to borrow a lot of money and have to pay back interest, and being able to respond in a reasonable way. The pandemic is a perfect example. We didn't have to go to the bond market, to the banks, and borrow money to get us through the difficult times we had in 2020. We had money that was available to help our partners, such as CUGA Medical Hospital, when they needed help, and they were working with us to do the testing that we needed. It's very important that we were able to keep our partners in a solvent situation and still get the kind of services we needed to keep the number of transmissions as low as possible in this county. We never know when we're going to get a flood. We never know when we're going to get an ice storm, and some of us remember the terrible ice storms we have. I remember the flood in my village of Dryden back in 1981. I hope it doesn't happen again, but we had to put in a flood control project that hopefully will not see a repeat of that right away. We could have any number of things that could happen. We know climate change is happening. Some of it's weather. We can't just every time it gets hot or every time it gets cold, we can't say it's immediately climate change. But we know that climate change is happening, and we have to take it seriously. I have no apologies for having a strong county financially and a strong county that has a reasonable fund balance to see our people through difficult times without having to borrow money or raise the taxes even more. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Well said. Many of us have been around long enough to see the days of recessions and everything else, and we have always sort of come out in a good place because we budget well, we spend well, and we forecast well some of the things that might come our way. But as you said, sometimes you just never know. So thank you for that. Anyone else? All right, I will take a quick moment on the privilege of the floor to give honor and respect to our former Secretary of State, Colin Powell, decorated four-star general, a statesman, and the first African-American to serve in that high-level position as Secretary of State in the United States of America. So please, in your own way, join me in honoring Mr. Powell for the work that he did, the life he led, and the example he set for so many of us. Thank you. Under Chair's report, I would like to ask this legislature to affirm an appointment by vote. I am bringing before you, and I will ask someone to move it and someone to second it, the appointment, and I'm going to ask them to get on camera, of Bill Troy, who is our current deputy county attorney. Are they there? Hello, looking for you. Yep, there you are. as the new county, Tompkins County attorney, as we all know, our long-term county attorney, Jonathan Wood, let us know that he will be retiring at the end of the year. And so we, as a legislature, just so everyone know, had an opportunity to interview an internal candidate. We wanted to do an internal promotion. And so we had a chance. We didn't just do it. We interviewed a candidate to make sure that this will be a good replacement, a good person in this position. And we all felt comfortable. We all felt well that this would be, that Bill Troy would be a good choice to be our next county, full-time county attorney. And so today I want to bring before you to have you confirm Bill Troy in this position. We will be overfilling the position according to HR. I'm using HR's words because there's already a county attorney in the position, but we will be overfilling to allow for some transition time between Jonathan and Bill. So, may I have someone move the legislature appointment of Bill Troy as the next county attorney? Move by, who said that?
Deborah.
Moved by Deborah. May I have someone second? Seconded by Glenn Morey. Oh, sorry. And the effective date
for this appointment will be November 1st, 2021. Discussion? Any discussion on this motion? Martha.
Thank you, Leslie. Hello, Bill. You're going to have to practice saying no report, but
I can do it.
Leslie, maybe you said it and I missed it. Are you saying the appointment would be as of November 1st as interim, or how does that work?
It will be an overfilled position, which meaning that it will be an extended county attorney position, and I'm hoping Ruby's on here, so we'll have two people in the same position at the same time.
Okay.
So it's overfilled.
Okay, thank you.
Did I do well, Ruby?
You did well.
Oh, got it, girl. Any other questions or discussion? Yes.
Sure, a little content. And the interview that we had with Mr. Troy, I thought was really informative, very, you know, comprehensive, but Bill had a way of being, saying a lot without too much, you know, without going, being like verbose or whatever. I mean, it was interesting, Bill. I haven't talked to you more than like passing in the parking lot all these years, but I was really pleased to hear your answers and your thoughtfulness, and I was very grateful that you're interested in moving to this position, and I'm sure that you'll do a great job. So thank you for sitting with us for that interview. I learned a lot.
Thank you, Martha, and Bill, for me, everything that Martha just said.
Thank you.
As well. Definitely, there's no question that you are well qualified for this position and the county will be in good hands. So let's vote. It'll have to be a roll call vote because we do have members in chambers as well as attending virtually.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Yes. Leslie Show?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Keen Eyes?
And that passes unanimously. Bill, welcome to.
Thank you all very much. I look forward to it. I think it'll be interesting.
Anything you want to say?
I don't know if my mic's working or not. But
you're on. We can hear you.
I'm delighted to do it. It's been fun for the couple of years I've been working as the deputy. It's a good group of people. I like the work, and I really look forward to it. I get to learn new things, probably a lot sooner than I realize I need to learn some new things, but that's the joy of being a lawyer. You get a new opportunity like this. So thank you. I'll do my very best.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, and we'll see you around. Thank you, legislators.
Thank you.
All right.
I'm going to take my leave. I have to go to another meeting, so please don't be a
All right, take care.
Okay, thank you.
I also have an appointment under my chair's report to the Workforce Development Board. Let me just find it quickly. Ashley Burke, from an organization serving individuals and disabilities representative. Term expires June 30th of 2022. And Danielle Harrington, 20% requirement, county-based organization. Term expires June 30th, 2024. All right. I have special presentation and or discussion. Do I have any staff waiting for anything to get through quickly? Okay. We'll get to that. Well, let me grab the presentation. These net zero carbon emissions. Who's in that presentation?
Well.
I thought I saw Arel.
Yes, hi.
I can't see anymore.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, but yes, if you can just a little bit louder.
Yes, good evening. How is everyone?
Pretty good. Hi, Arel.
Hello.
Hi, Terry. Hi, Chris.
Yes, I've been waiting for this moment, I think, for the last 5 years to make this presentation to the legislature. We made a very similar presentation about a month ago to the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. So some of you present today remember that presentation. Also attending are Terry Carroll, the Chief Sustainability Officer in the Planning Department. And he's been with us 4 months. It's hard to believe we've done so much, and it's only been 4 months' time. Also, there are two representatives from Johnson Controls that I will introduce shortly. So I will get into the presentation and share my screen. Can everyone see that?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. So this is the Green Facilities Net Zero Carbon Emissions Project, and that's a mouthful, so I just call it the Green Facilities Capital Project for short. It's a partnership between Tompkins County and Johnson Controls, and it's a partnership that we've had for over 20 years. And going to the next slide. And this is a slide that I will have Terry talk about, since that's his strength and background.
Yeah, so many of you will be familiar with the charts that you see here. They're from our 2019 greenhouse gas inventory that's been presented before. And what you'll see on that left-hand side, if we can go back one here. Yeah, so what you can see on that left-hand side is basically what our total emissions for county government operations are. And that first bar there is our building and facilities. And you can see that once you account for methane, which we're doing in our new methodologies, it's really our largest source of emissions for government operations. And so, a program like this, the Green Facilities Capital Project, that's going to tackle our buildings and facilities, that's going to really target our natural gas usage is going to have a huge impression on our overall operations emissions. And so it's, critically important. So right now we're working hard on our vehicles with the Green Fleet Capital Fund. And so we're really excited about this, particular project for what it can do for our buildings. The chart on the right, I think, speaks to something that Arel is going to get to in a moment, which is our county emissions over time. And you'll see starting in 2008, slowly going, through our inventories up to 2019, that we've seen some, pretty, big shifts in building usage or building emissions. And a lot of that has to do from our partnership with Johnson Controls. And so we're hopeful that this next stage will take us even further. So the last thing I wanted to mention, is that our 2019 energy strategy talks about us reducing our emissions, as quickly as possible by the largest amount. And I really think that this is the way that we're going to get there. So just incredibly excited to be working with Arel and Johnson Controls, Chris and Ray, on this project. And hopefully we'll have you all supporting it tonight.
Thank you, Terry. So this next slide is an overview of what we've achieved over the years. So back in 2005 was the first energy project that we did. I mean, actually a significant project with Johnson Controls over 15 years ago, and it focused on a lot of the low-hanging fruit to save energy, lighting, and occupancy sensors in most all our county buildings, HVAC controls, boiler replacements, air handling equipment, roofing systems, and it had guaranteed savings. So energy performance contract guaranteed savings year to year, and we actually achieved 100% of those savings after year 14, a year ahead of schedule. So the bond for the project was paid out in the last payment in 2020. So when I said 5 years ago, I had anticipated once we paid off the bond for this project that we would be moving forward with other projects, larger projects, more renewable. Back also after the 2005 projects, and that was going so well, we did a phase two, which focused primarily on the main courthouse, and we did boiler replacements, rooftop units, and a roof replacement that was also very successful in saving energy. And things have been going so well that we also looked at making improvements to the public safety building. Rather than waiting for funding to address some of these improvements, we took advantage of energy improvements where there was better grants and funding to make improvements to that building that's really now 36 years old. So we replaced boilers, heat pumps, controls, and the roof replacement. Then in 2019, as we were approaching the end of the bond payments for that initial project from 2005, I invited Johnson Controls to go throughout all our buildings to do a preliminary analysis and determine the opportunities that existed for yet another energy project, a much larger one where we would look at renewables and what we could do specifically to reduce our carbon emissions to net zero. And so they did that analysis, which came up with about $30 million in cost to achieve these goals. So in 2020, we then took advantage of the information we gathered. Our county administrator at the time, Jason, had asked for an estimate of what it would take to green our facilities. And we provided that estimate of $30 million to achieve net zero emissions. That project was approved by the legislature, at least as a capital project to move forward to do some initial studies. And so end of 2020 and 2021, we did a FlexTech study through an NYSERDA grant to really take a more preliminary look at the potential for the developing these energy improvement opportunities with Johnson Controls and achieve this net zero countywide. And this plan was done by Johnson Controls, completed earlier this year, and it was presented to the Green Fleet and Facilities team, which is an internal county team, in August. And we got great support for moving forward with the project and presenting it then to the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee meeting or committee last month. The team between the county and Johnson Controls is myself, Alan, our deputy, Terry Carroll, the chief sustainability officer, and then the individuals with Johnson Controls, which they should be on this meeting here. Chris Fitzsimmons, it's the account manager. I see him more as the project manager for Johnson Controls. Ray Martucci is the engineer that's really been most involved in developing the study, really all the technical aspects in the study, and Joe Richards is the operations leader. As we move into really implementation of the project, it would be Jamie Budd from Johnson Controls as a construction manager, and Jerry Aloy as their performance specialist. It would make sure that we're achieving the savings. All of these individuals have been involved with the county in previous projects. Jamie Budd, the construction manager, oversaw the implementation projects back in 2005, 2006, and 2013. And we did those projects successfully in occupied buildings. I mean, those projects were very disruptive, but we were able to complete them successfully with really minor complaints at all from departments in those buildings where we were making the improvements. So I don't know if you can see Chris and Ray. Are you guys on video? So at least you were able to...
Yes, I'll just say hello, Chris Fitzsimmons, account manager. Thank you all for your time, continued support. This partnership is important to us, and this project is amazing. We're coming up with some good plans forward and a good path to net zero for the county. Really excited about it. Ray, I'll pass it over to you.
Sorry about that. No, I just agree with what Chris said. We're excited to be here to talk about this exciting project, helping the county get to reduce their carbon footprint and get to net zero. It's a wonderful project to work on, so I'm very appreciative. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chris and Ray. And so this is really the meat of the project. They're the facility improvement measures, or FIMS for short. And we've broken them out in three phases. So initially I indicated that the initial assessment and cost for making improvements countywide was about $30 million. We knew that funding-wise, we would like to do them all at once, but we know that we don't have the funding to do it all at once. And so we phased them in three phases of about $7.5 million. For this initial phase. And in orange is the projects that we're looking at doing as the initial phase. Most of those are some of the low-hanging fruit. And as you can see in the matrix, it impacts almost every county building that we have. We wanted the visibility that as we're doing these projects, not only the public, but also employees and staff would see, you know, that we're making improvements in our facilities. So they include, you know, things from lighting to water conservation to some electrical improvements, computer power management. And then as you get lower on this orange portion, you look at, we've got window replacement at the mental health building, roof replacements at the library, and really the big one, renewable, is geothermal that we were looking at starting at our facility here at Public Works Facility. At the very end, you see column for the annual savings for each of these improvement measures, and then also the carbon emissions reductions associated with each measure. The two subsequent phases in blue and green are larger projects as far as cost-wise. They include solar, some additional geothermal, some newer technology, as well. And then the last phase would be really some retro commissioning, additional solar, distributed batteries, or really storage batteries, and some additional geothermal at the main court complex. And at the bottom, you see the phasing. We're looking at the initial phase in orange would be next year into 2023. And our hope is that the subsequent phases would be 2024, 2025. And the final phase in 2026. The total annual savings that you see at the bottom right for all of these improvements is about $422,000 annually. And here it just shows the three phases broken out by the project costs, but also more importantly, the carbon reductions for each of them, for each of the phases, starting at the current carbon emissions is 1,300 metric tons, and by the completion of the third phase, we'd be down to zero, net zero. This is another graphic showing those same carbon emission reductions. Whoops. And a pie chart, which is about a third. Each phase would basically reduce by a third our current carbon emissions. This is a kind of the timeline of the milestones that we've achieved. In dark green are the completed milestones where we did the study, identified the improvement measures, presented it to the county's internal Green Fleet and Facilities team in August, then took it to the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee last month for presenting and getting their approval to move forward to then present it to you, the legislature. The next steps would include finalizing the agreement to go into the detailed engineering phase and then starting that detailed engineering phase with the hopes of next year to develop the scope of work to move forward with implementation starting at the bottom May of next year.
Burrell, could you speak up a little bit, please?
No.
So, no, that's the presentation. If you want to go over something that was hard to hear, I can do that. But we wanted to keep it brief and open it
up. Thank you, Burrell. For some strange reason, it gets a little difficult to hear in chambers on the Zoom. Questions? Martha.
Thank you, Leslie. Burrell, this is terrific. I do have a couple of questions. Could you go back two slides to the grid, or three slides, the next one? All right. The way that shows up on the big screen here and in our print, it's really hard to see where phase one and phase two, the difference between one and two. Can you, so am I right that geothermal installation on public works is the last item in phase one and boiler replacement is phase two?
Correct. Yes. Right where my pointer is.
Okay. Great. For some reason, the colors don't show. I'm curious. So you've got two boiler replacements in the Human Services Building and Emergency Response. So does that keep us, are they using gas now? And would that be replacing boilers with new gas furnaces?
Yes. Yeah, so, so we've got in phase two, that first one is boiler replacements, correct, at Human Services Building and Emergency Response. Those are original boilers at both buildings. Human Services 1997 and Emergency Response 2014. So we're looking there to either go to high efficiency gas, but also we've been looking at not even using gas because we're trying to eliminate that. And so I know that Ray, that is on the call, may be able to provide some more information on the boilers that we're looking at for these two projects.
Yeah, well, Arel is right. In those cases, right now, we are targeting high-efficiency gas boilers. Technology is changing. This is in the second phase. There are some heat pump style boilers that are becoming kind of coming onto the scene, which is more of an electric option. So we're monitoring that, and you know, in best case scenario, maybe we can make a transition, and we'd love to be able to completely eliminate the gas usage of those facilities. It's just right now this is the safer approach to take, we think, and at least for planning.
I would strongly urge that. I don't see we're investing in any new gas equipment or infrastructure is the right way to go, even if those two projects have to wait till phase three, if there's a way to, you know, if the technology needs another year. Am I correct? So what you're saying, Burrell, if this is all kept on target, on schedule, that for our buildings will be net zero by the end of 2026?
Yes, I mean, we're presenting it the way we feel that we can accomplish the project as far as the all the FIMS involved. What isn't clear yet is funding-wise from the legislature. I mean, initially, Jason, when I started putting this together, you know, more than a year ago, said, you know, take an aggressive approach. So this is somewhat aggressive. And so we're basically letting you know that we can accomplish the work shown on this matrix following that timeline. what yet needs to be determined by the legislature is we only have funding at this point for doing the first phase. And if the legislature decides that, yes, we want to continue it in 2024 or delay it a little longer, really that's up to a decision that you would need to make. But we're saying that we can complete, yes, within, by 2026, we can complete all of these projects.
I think just the one thing to add to that, I mean, the other thing is, you know, there's a couple of buildings that aren't included in this. So the airport isn't included. You know, they are doing a lot of fantastic work, you know, and have their own plans to get there. And so some of this is predicated on the airport also getting to net zero. And then the public safety building you'll see isn't included in this as well. You know, the future of that building is still being decided. So there, you know, two small caveats there.
Right.
Got it. And that's just brilliant and wonderful. I'd note that our emissions for vehicles aren't included in this at all, though, right?
No, they're not included.
Okay. All right. Thank you very, very much.
All right. I have Mike Ziegler, Shauna Black, Deborah Dawson, and Leslie Schell.
Hi, thanks. I actually have three questions. They're all kind of quick. The last one dovetails off of Martha's question. I guess I don't really understand the accounting, just because there, with the whole plan is said and done, it looks like there's three buildings that will have gone geothermal. Presumably the other buildings that are on this list will still be using natural gas because that's what we use now. So I guess I don't understand how you get to net zero from there. So I have a lot of people on the line that can answer that. So I figured it was a good time to ask that question. So.
Yeah, so, I mean, I can answer it, and then Ray or Terry, you can chime in as well. When we looked at when we did the initial analysis back in 2019.
Arel, once yeah. again, can you get a little closer to your mic?
Okay.
It's really hard to hear you.
All right, can you hear me better now?
Keep that same level and tone, and we got it.
Okay, all right. I think I'm Hispanic, and it's hard for me to talk and not move, so I will try to keep my same distance from the microphone. So in looking at all the buildings, we were not able to do geothermal in every building. There are limitations, space, locations, and such. So where we could do it, we're maximizing the use of geothermal. Now, in the court where it says geothermal for the court, courts, it's really the court complex, which we're looking at would be including the Center for Government building and all the other buildings in the court complex. The other buildings, you know, aside from the public works, we just have limitations in just property. They're very small size lots. So what we're doing is to offset that where we can't do it, we're maximizing solar. So you'll see solar in the phase two and also solar in the phase three. So we're using a combination of renewables, be it solar, geothermal, or others to really achieve that net zero. I mean, it would be great if we could do geothermal in every building, but it's not really practical in every building. And I did not read or Terry, if you had any.
I just want to add geothermal is a heat pump system that's ground source. It's a very efficient way to go. We tried to do that where possible. But some other buildings were going towards air source heat pumps, such as at the library where the existing rootop units would be replaced with air source heat pumps. Again, can't do ground source because of the limitation of space there. Over at the mental health building, VRF, which is another very highly efficient air source heat pump. But the idea there is to get away from natural gas. So whether it's the geothermal or the air source direction, you know, that's what we recommended.
Well, that all actually brings me back to my second question, which is right now we purchase about 60% of our electricity for the county for hydro. Obviously, we're going to be using a lot more electricity with this program. Do we have plans to buy more hydro? I mean, I know solar's in here. Is that going to be enough to kind of offset all of that?
So I can tackle it. So right now, you're right. We get a lot of our renewable energy certificates that allow us to claim that we're 100% renewable through a hydro facility. We also, you know, actually buy a lot of our renewable energy certificates through a contract with Constellation that provides them on a national basis. And so we're pretty well covered in that respect in order to be able to say that we're continuing to buy 100% renewable. I think moving forward, you know, that last phase, the solar PV field mount, you know, one of the things that we've talked about with Johnson Controls is doing something similar to what we did with that hydro facility, which would be, you know, entering into what's called a power purchase agreement, where we would buy electricity directly from a solar farm and hopefully get the renewable energy certificates along with it. And so that's something Johnson Controls has said that they can do. And that's what our hope would be to try and supplement our hydro with something like that.
Thanks, Terry.
All right, Shauna.
Yes, I think this information is super cool, and thank you all for coming in today. It's great to see what the county is doing to move towards our initiatives and to see all of the graphs and the comprehensive scope. I really appreciate that. My question, and I hope I'm not stealing Ann Corman's thunder, is on the electric vehicles. I wanted to see what electric vehicles we purchased in the past and what we will be purchasing in the future.
Yeah, so I mean, that could be a whole separate presentation and one that we'd be happy to give at some point. You know, in the past, we've bought a lot of Chevy Volts, which is a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle, so it uses both gas and electricity. We've bought in a lot of Nissan Leafs. You know, a lot of these are at mental health, you know, human services. The health department has done a phenomenal job of adopting electric vehicles. You know, this year we bought another 6 vehicles, including our first ones for facilities and recycling and materials management. We bought a plug-in hybrid for the sheriff's office, which we're excited to get to them, as well as some hybrid vehicles that's going to help reduce the amount of idling emissions. So it'll run on batteries when they're idling. And next year, the hope is to start bringing in a lot more, you know, SUVs and trucks as they become available. But, you know, the difficulty that we've had this year is, I think, the difficulty that everyone's having, which is procurement with the vehicles. You know, a lot of the ones that we wanted to procure this year just weren't available. So we're having to push some of our you know, hopeful procurement for this year on to next year. So we expect next year will be a big year.
Okay. And then my other question was, I know that part of the reconciliation bill that right now is being debated includes a $12,500 point of sale credit on the actual MSRP of the automobile. Would the county be eligible for that?
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, until it's written, we're not sure. I mean, the way that it's built, you know, the one that currently exists is a federal tax credit. You know, if it maintains some sort of tie to the tax credit system, then no. But if it really is just a point of sale, you know, rebate, you know, that's similar to what New York State has right now. And we're able to take advantage of the New York State, you know, rebate. So we're hopeful that we'd be able to take advantage of that as well. That would certainly help us, you know, push things further and faster.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's it.
Thank you, Shauna. Sorry, you're not getting a Tesla.
Deborah?
And then Leslie?
Leslin, Arel already answered my question about the courthouse complex being served by the geothermal, so I'm good. Thanks.
Thank you. Leslie?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Arel, and thank you, everyone, for the great presentation. A couple of thoughts. One, I think it would be super helpful to see on your facility improvement measure slide, which I like in the phasing. I'd love to see the cost per initiative there as well. Not just the savings is great, but I'd love to see, you know, what the estimated cost for those different initiatives are. I think it's important that we're addressing, you know, envelope and efficiency first and then digging into renewables, highly dependent upon electrification, obviously, whether it's air source heat or, you know, earth source heat, essentially, for geothermal. Is there a specific approach that you all take for redundant backup energy for heating, critical infrastructure, lighting for facilities of the future that we'd be thinking about bringing on? And what would the fuel source be for those?
So let's see. So in this one, and what I presented here near the bottom in the third phase, we have distributed energy storage. So batteries, we were trying to look at using that in several other buildings, but there were limitations, both code limitations that prevented us to do it at most buildings. And so this one is looking at the main courthouse complex, the human services building. We currently have generators in most of our mission critical buildings, but they're fossil fuel, diesel, very few, mostly natural gas. So we are talking about exploring that more so that we do have, more redundancy. I know we're working with the planning department and Scott Doyle in particular to look at their federal opportunities and grants to look at those things to provide that backup generation. But at this point, no, we haven't focused a lot there to look at, other sources of backup. We do have redundancies in our systems as far as heating and cooling systems, but there are more redundancy where we have either additional boilers or heat pumps and such, but not emergency backup aside from the ones that I've mentioned.
Thanks. And just one follow-up for Terry. I'm wondering, I know that we're not required to comply with the Ithaca Green Energy Code, but I'm wondering how these initiatives stack up against that, particularly in the retrofit as that code gets more stringent over time.
Yeah, I mean, we'd have to take a close look at kind of what path we wanted to go down. I mean, that code as it stands right now is, primarily for new construction and major retrofits. And so we'd have to look at whether what we're doing in some of these buildings would, constitute that major retrofit category. But I think, overall that code is, that supplement is looking towards electrification as well. So I think, we fall pretty close in line and, we'll do what we can to try and line up as much as we can with Ithaca's Green New Deal, but we're both heading on parallel paths towards net zero. So I think we're pretty well situated.
Thank you.
All right. I have Ann Corman, Dan Klein, and then Martha, and then let's wrap this up.
Thank you. Thank you for the extensive presentation again. A lot of my questions have been answered. The one I have left is as far as phase two, Arel talked about if this is approved, financial backing is approved by the legislature. What's the timeline, do you know, for us approving that?
So
for phase two.
Yeah, so at this point, the study that we will be embarking on now will be looking at all of these phases, and it's really just the engineering portion of that. But the part that we intend to implement just based on the capital plan as it stands now is the phase one in orange. Our hope is that, come next year, in July, prior to that, we'll be discussing with county administration, legislature, whether to proceed with phase two. And if so, when that would occur. I mean, our hope is that we would be able to start that in 2024. And so that's why I basically put the timeline at the bottom to let you know we can move at that speed. What we would hope is that the legislature would make a decision, at least, by next year, earlier next year, when they would like to proceed with the subsequent phases.
Okay, great. And yeah, of course, if it was up to me, I'd say go ahead. But so it would be helpful too, as legislator Schill mentioned, if we could have a breakdown of the costs and that if that could be sent to us.
All right. And what I indicated that this question came up at facilities and infrastructure, and this next phase in the detailed engineering, we will actually be able to share all of those numbers in much more level of detail. than what you're seeing at this point, because we're going to have to make decisions as far as scope and which ones we truly of the ones that you're seeing here, we want to make the top priority, make sure we do first. So we'll have a lot more data at this, at the next phase of detailed engineering. This is what we would determine a really preliminary assessment. And Ray is the one that's really done all the numbers. And so I think we would prefer to present those detailed numbers at the conclusion of the detailed engineering, where we would be coming back again to the legislature to make decisions prior to moving forward with implementing any of these improvements.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. I have Dan and County Administrator Lisa before I go back to Martha. Dan?
Thank you. At the F&I committee where we had this presentation, I asked some questions about financing, about the financial aspect of it. And I got a little pushback from some of my colleagues, but I wanted to talk a little more about that because I think it's an important part of this. So when we look at this chart that has all the projects and the annual savings and the carbon emissions, what's not on that chart is a couple of things. There's the lifespan of the projects is not yet included, the maintenance costs are not yet included, and how many years to pay back is not included. And Arel indicated that that information will be available probably around March as more engineering is done, and that's perfectly fine. I'm glad to hear that. I just don't want us to lose track of those kinds of factors as we think about this too. I put a photovoltaic solar panels on my house in 2006. At that time, the estimate was that it was going to take me 18 years to pay back, the savings was going to take 18 years to pay back the cost of that project. Coming up on 18 years, turns out it was, the estimate was wrong. It's not going to pay back in 18 years. But I made that decision. That was my own money, and I felt like I wanted to do that. In 2013, I put solar hot water panels on my house. And that project is never going to pay itself back. I only save about $50 a year by my calculation in hot water. It's never going to pay back the couple of thousand that I put into it. But I made that decision based with my money and on my values. I feel a little differently when we're talking about public money. I'm not opposed to it. I just feel like it's important that we really flesh out the numbers and really understand what we're getting into, what we're talking about. The estimate for all these projects is $30 million. And the estimated annual savings at this point, at least, is $422,000 a year. And if you just did the quick math tonight, just divide those two numbers, you come out with 71 years to pay these back, which is, most of them will not have a lifespan that long. Payback is not the only factor here. Net zero is our goal. I support this goal of net zero. I just, it's just important to me that we keep asking questions about the costs, the payback time, the costs that we don't know yet, such as maintenance and replacement and those kinds of things. So that's all. I just wanted to make sure that that stays a part of this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. So I anticipate, as Arel was saying, there'll be a lot more conversation happening around this. This was basically just the skeleton, and there'll be lots of flesh packed on that we can talk about at a later date. Lisa.
Thank you. I just wanted to say briefly that to point out that all three phases of the Green Facilities project are included in the five-year capital plan, which goes from 2022 to 2026, which takes us through to phase three. So that assumption is baked in, so to speak, to the capital plan and to what we will be expecting to pay annually in terms of our contribution to the capital program and so forth. Just wanted to make that
Thank you. All right, Martha, put a bow on it. So
okay. So if we approve the capital plan in the next, tonight and then in the final budget, that'll be approved. This is in the plan.
That's correct. It's in the plan. That's not to say next year, if we run into trouble, we couldn't change course and defer, you know,
in the plan.
Phases. But this is our 5-year plan and our intention.
That's what a plan is, because you have to start with something. So, Arel, we're doing a lot of retro commissioning there on the third phase. I couldn't remember what did you say that is?
So retro commissioning is where you go through your systems and make sure that they're performing correctly, that they're not out of calibration. And so, especially we have a lot of controls that control our HVAC boilers, heat pumps and such. And so retro commissioning over time, your sensors drift, and you want to do the retro commissioning to make sure that everything is performing the way it should be. We did this probably 10 to 15 years ago, and we found a lot of opportunities and savings. So that's what retro commissioning is. Ray, that's on there, he may be able to add to what I've said.
No, I thought you did a good job, Arel. Yeah, we wanted to include that towards the end here of the process. As a lot of this new equipment goes in, it'll be commissioned properly, but there'll still be the overall system and existing equipment that it would probably be time to do a retro commissioning. And there's always energy savings that we can come up with when we do that.
Thank you very much. That makes sense. On electric vehicles, which I know this is not the plan for those. My understanding is there are significant savings when you have an EV in terms of maintenance. So that's another piece there. Terry, do you know how many electric vehicles we have in our fleet at this point?
I think we just got one last Friday. So I think that takes us up to 25, 26, somewhere in that range.
Okay. Thank you very much. And I just to the public and anybody else listening, I certainly hope that there will be by the end of the third phase or sooner, I hope there will be a price on carbon established, in which case the payback period will be breathtakingly different. So I think the cost of doing nothing is far bigger than what this will be. Thank you very much. This is a great plan.
All right. Thank you all very much. Is there anything else from URL and the team?
No, actually, that's a good point, because we've been talking about that, Terry, Ray, and Chris, about, you know, putting a number to like a carbon credit number, because, yes, that would really change the whole financials as you look at them. But, yes, once we get at the end of the energy study phase, we will be looking at all of the items that Dan brought up and others as well.
All right. Well, again, thank you all. Thanks, everyone. And look forward to more conversation as all of this gets flushed out.
Yes. Thanks for your time.
Okay. Have a good night.
You too.
I'm going to shuffle a couple of things around quickly because we have some staff waiting. I'd love to take up the consent agenda as well as ask Mike and Facilities and Infrastructure to take off the bond resolution for Dewar. All right. So let me look at consent agenda. Resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group unless any member of the legislature requests that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of standing or special committee. And we have an appointment to the Board of Assessment Review, and that is, where did it go? There it is. Jan DeRoos. Term expires September 30th, 2026. On the Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution A, Budget Adjustment, Tompkins County Office for the Aging. 2021-2022 Unmet Needs Funding, ID 10407. Resolution B, Grant Acceptance and Budget Adjustment, Lifespan of Greater Rochester, Inc., Office for the Aging, ID 10434.
Resolution C, budget transfer to move additional funding into caregiver respite program, Office for the Aging, ID 10436. And on the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution D, award of contract terminal vending, Ithaca Tompkins International Airport, ID 10445. May I have someone move the consent agenda, please? Moved by Leslie Shim. May I have a second? Seconded by Anna Corman. All right. We have sitting in chambers with, oh, we have to vote. Sorry. Vote on the consent agenda.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Shim?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
All right, that carries. And on the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, we have our Director of the Department of Emergency Response, Michael Stifley, sitting here with us, taking, I know you wanted to get out of your office and come sit in this lovely chambers all night, but we'll try and get you home. So, Mike Lane, Chair of Facilities and Infrastructure Committee.
Are you asking me to do just the resolution?
To move, yeah, just move your the resolution, I think, is resolution I.
Resolution I, then. A bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $4,900,000 serial bonds and notes for the County of Tompkins to pay the cost of construction of a backup emergency communications center. That's ID 10380, and I so move.
Seconded by Glenn Morey. Discussion? Aye.
I know there was some discussion about this resolution because we're actually going to have a presentation about this at our Facilities Committee on Thursday. And the question was, well, should we wait on this resolution until after we've had more briefing on it for the county legislators? We consulted Lisa Holmes on it, and her feeling was that we should go ahead with it, and we don't have to actually borrow the money if there should be some difficulty that should arise based on the presentation. Am I correct, Lisa?
Yes, thank you, Mike. It's there's a finances under a tight timeline in terms of the bond resolution. So it was because of that calendar, unfortunately, they would like to continue to move this forward.
Other discussion? Leslie Shim.
Can we hear a little bit about it? I've been trying to find out a little bit about it, but late in the game, so my apologies.
All right. So I'm going to say this as a precursor. The director of DOOR is here so that he can answer questions. That does not mean that we grill him all night. Well, only a little bit. So, yes, Mike, if you want to share a little bit, please pull up to any one of the chairs and microphones around the table.
Very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here this evening. So I'm not sure if you'd just like to meet for me to give an overview or if you would like for me to answer
an overview.
Specific questions. So when I was actually interviewing for this position, one of the things that was made very clear to me was how important this project was, not only to the legislature, but also to the residents of Tompkins County. So in the very short 2 months that I've been here, this has been one of my top priorities, working with my team, understanding where the project has been to date. The money that we've asked for, it's my understanding that that figure was determined prior to my arrival back in 2019, again, at a very high level, just to make sure that we had enough in order to make it through the entire project. So what I've recently done with my team is breaking it up into three phases. The first phase And when I say three phases, a lot of these are going to be able to happen in parallel with one another and overlap. It's just a way of sort of managing this project because how large of a project it is. But we've noticed some gaps, not only in the fact that we don't have a backup center, meaning that if something catastrophic were to happen at our current location, we don't have somewhere to go to continue 911 operations. So that's really what I would consider to be phase one. And we're fortunate enough to have a partner in Cornell, and they've helped us identify a space. And this why we'll be talking a little bit more about on Thursday, but it is at the Pine Tree Mall. There's a space there on Pine Tree Hill Road where we're going to have the center. It was that space was just identified officially about 3 weeks ago, and we're right now just waiting on some paperwork from Cornell that we can pass on to the Tompkins legal team to ensure that the MOU is where it needs to be for us to share that space. Phase two is to address what I would consider to be some rather large gaps in our redundancy or the lack of redundancy in our current 911 system, meaning that we have some hardware that does not have redundant components spaced out throughout the county. Like, it's not geodiverse, which means everything that we currently have is at our location at 92 Brown Road, meaning, again, if something were to happen at that location, we were pretty much, you know, unable to operate our 911 center. So even though we have some redundancy at the 911 center, meaning that if a component did fail, we'd be able to continue to operate. If we ever had anything really catastrophic, we would not. And then the third phase is to make some much needed renovations to our current 911 space that has, quite frankly, outside of the fantastic work that our IT team has done in making sure our IT equipment is up to speed, a lot of the other equipment in there is really at end of life. So does that help?
That helps. Questions? That's it. That okay for you? All right.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Michael. So is this bonding for all of those three phases? Or just for the backup center?
So my understanding it is for all three of those phases. Again, it's my understanding that much of this has already been decided prior to my arrival. So that's the direction I'm continuing to go in. But, you know, we're already making some adjustments to the original plan as far as what we need, what our needs are. And that's something else I want to point out is next Monday, we're having a meeting internally to do a secondary needs assessment. So we're really getting what we need versus maybe net what we want. And I want to make sure that we're a good steward with this funding and that we're really, again, focusing on needs and not wants.
And I have heard that the annual emergency funding we get from the state for communications would pay pay the annual cost for the borrowing.
Yes, that's the plan. The New York State Interoperability Grant, which we get every year, which goes to pay for these capital infrastructure projects or maintenance on existing assets, that would be what we would use to pay off the borrowing, the debt service.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Rick, I saw that you had unmuted. Was there something you wanted to add?
Only that when we go out to issue this debt, this will be in the form of a one-year ban. So that limits it to just that term of 1 year, which just to gather more information, begin to understand what the long-term bonding might be for the project. So when we say in the authorization that it's $4.9 million, it's actually in its first and initial year a ban. So that's one thing I wanted to bring to your attention. The second thing is that the bond attorney has alerted me to the fact that since they picked the location and the partnership with Cornell, that they have to work through some of the legal ramifications. Our attorney team with Bill and Jonathan will have to work with Bill Markfort because it could be a taxable bond versus a non-taxable bond. I just want to alert you to that because our bond counsel has advised us it might go in that direction because we're partnering with Cornell. And secondly, that we do have to form and execute that memo of understanding or some kind of agreement with Cornell in order to pull this all together. So that's another thing that the bond counsel has advised that our attorneys need to be able to work with Cornell to bring that to fruition. And Mike's already mentioned that in his presentation.
All right. Thank you. Henry, you have a question?
Yeah. Why does working with Cornell make it possibly taxable bonding?
I'm not sure. I'm just passing that on from the bond counsel. I don't know the legal ramifications. That's something that our attorneys with bond counsel will have to determine. I don't know why. I just know that he threw that out there.
Okay. All right. Thank you. It was moved and seconded, right? All right. Let's vote.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Mooring?
Yes.
Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Shope?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. That carries unanimously. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome. And thank you, Mike Lane, Chair of F&I, for bringing that forward. Now, let's see, where am I on the agenda? Reports from County Administrator, County Attorney, and Director of Finance. Is there anybody else waiting for anything before I go there? I don't see anybody. All right. Lisa, do you have a report for us?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We have a COVID update for the legislature tonight in conjunction with the team from the EOC, Amy, Dominic, Jay.
All right. Take it away, folks. And I dare you to do it in 1 minute.
We'll try our best.
All right. Can everyone see the slideshow? All right.
You can, but it's not in presentation mode again.
It is on my screen, so that's always fun. Hold on just a second. It would be much easier, I guess, if I didn't use multiple screens for this. Is it in presentation mode now, Leslie?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
And I think people can see it.
I was going to say, I'm going to.
Dominic is the communications guy. He says press that button and
do Amy, it. If you share your screen, if you exit shared screen and then play the presentation, and then when you go to share your screen, select the monitor that you have with the presentation playing in full mode, that should work.
Instead of selecting the, I gotcha.
Instead of selecting PowerPoint, that should work.
All right, let's see. Did that
and
work?
And that's why he's the communications director.
Thanks, Dominic. So I guess it'll take me a minute to get the slideshow up, but we will run through this brief COVID update. COVID data, we have 4 hospitalizations at this point and 37 deaths. not a lot of change between last time on the death side of thing, and the hospitalization rate, I believe, is down from the last time. We have about 125 active cases at this point. And our vaccine doses, we continue to administer some vaccine. I know Frank's going to talk a little bit more about that, but we're still moving forward, but very slowly. Since we last met, another executive order had come out, an executive order 6, which was issued on October 8th, which continues executive orders which have been in place for many years. Since we last met, Cornell also announced their pilot program for fully vaccinated students who are able to test out of isolation. These are fully vaccinated asymptomatic students, and they have to have at least 2 negative tests. And so they're piloting this program. It is something that we could look into in the future for a broader community, depending on how that pilot goes. We continue to translate our materials and are continuing to do so as current quarantine and isolation guidance has changed. We are in the process of translating that. And then we're continuing to hold some booster clinics. We have held a few of those and will continue to do that in the future. You'll notice as I began the presentation, we have started to shift our language to really focus on hospitalizations and severity of disease versus the case count of disease. COVID is something that is here right now and is prevalent in the community. And so what we are doing is looking at how severe the disease is versus the spread of the disease. And I'm sure Frank will talk a little more about that. We've also shifted this a little. This is used to be a bunch of charts and numbers. So what you will see on the left-hand side it relates to the total employee hours, combined overtime and regular hours. So you can see the amount of time being spent on COVID response efforts. And then if you look along the right-hand axis, you'll see that this is the amount of money that we've spent on total employee expenses, the combined pay, overtime, and comp time. And then the red part of this graph shows you COVID-19-related expenses, the non-employee expenses. So that falls into things like our surveillance testing as well as other related expenses. From here, I'm going to turn it over to Frank to talk to you more about what's happening with the vaccine.
So this week we are hosting booster dose clinics for individuals that received Pfizer. This will be our third week of doing that. We are not doing Moderna or Johnson & Johnson because neither of them has been fully approved yet for booster doses. And we actually will be asking our community to go to local pharmacies and their healthcare providers for those boosters when they do become approved. Because we're going to be shifting and focusing our attention to the children age 5 to 11, which we're expecting review towards the end of October and hopefully full approval around Halloween time. We're going to be partnering with Kaga Medical Center to use the mall site, as well as Buttermilk Falls Northeast and Wellbeing Pediatrics, our 3 local pediatric practices, to staff those large-scale clinics for children 5 to 11 so we can do as many children as quickly as possible. Got Amy. We're providing tonight some demographic information in relation to the hospital admissions. These are some pretty striking graphs, these next few slides. So over the time frame from August 1st through the 19th, we've had 44 admissions into the hospital of non-vaccinated people to 21 fully vaccinated individuals. Probably more important is the next slide. The average age of the non-vaccinated individuals is 55.7 years of age, and the average age of hospitalized vaccinated individuals is 77.1. And I point out that the majority of our hospitalizations are unvaccinated individuals, so that 55.7 has a good chunk of data associated with it. It's not a couple of outliers that are impacting that. So really what this is telling us is what we already knew, that particularly for younger individuals that might be less likely to have underlying health conditions, being unvaccinated creates a significant risk of needing hospitalization related to COVID. So again, our message is get vaccinated. Got Amy, next slide. This one kind of paints that same picture by age range. As you can see, under 70 years of age, we've only had five vaccinated individuals in the hospital compared to 19, 20, 26, 32 unvaccinated folks. So again, this shows, particularly as you get younger, the significance in being vaccinated and hospitalization. So we've known this. We've been talking about it from a statewide and national perspective. But now that we've had enough data to look at it locally, our data is demonstrating the same thing. Unvaccinated individuals, particularly those under 70 years of age, are at significantly more risk of being hospitalized due to COVID. These are our positive cases by age range. This is a demographic slide that we shared before. Not a lot of movement really along these slides, but just wanted to continue to share how the demographics are playing out. Same again along race lines. Not a lot of movement as we've seen throughout. So things are staying pretty consistent. And same with ethnicity. Our vaccination progress, numbers are going up a bit. We're seeing a lot of, we're seeing some vaccinations occurring because of some of the mandates are in place. Again, it's incremental growth in our vaccination status, but everyone vaccinated is a plus. So I'm still heading in the right direction.
Came very close to the minute. Look at that. Questions, comments? Thank you all. Thanks for your continued work as well. Martha?
This is great work. On the vaccinations, we've got 75,000 first doses and 70 or so completed. That's of the total population of 110,000, right? So if you just look at the eligible population in the county, 75,000 must be pretty high percentage of the folks who are eligible. Is that right?
Yeah, 18 plus fully vaccinated is 81.2%, I believe.
81%. Then when I look at your numbers of, like 44 in the hospital who were not vaccinated, 21 who had been vaccinated in the hospital. So again, you're looking at the percentage. So 21 out of 75,000 is a lot less than 44 out of 20,000 or 30,000. So, I mean, that's sort of more evidence. It's really, really makes a difference. Okay, and I guess just for the public, there were a lot of comments about Colin Powell yesterday. Well, he was vaccinated, but he died anyway. Could you just kind of elucidate on that for a few minutes about his underlying conditions, et cetera? I think it's really unfortunate that people are taking a critical tack on that.
Yeah, I don't know. How much air I want to spend on comments that are that directed. But from his perspective, he was an 84-year-old man that was fully vaccinated, got COVID, and by accounts from his family passed away from it. No vaccine is 100%, and nobody has ever said that. We've known all along that seniors are more susceptible to COVID. We've pretty much known that since day one and have said that. So it really just points to the need for having as many eligible people vaccinated as possible, so we have the fewest amount of cases in our community to protect those that are most vulnerable, namely those that can't be vaccinated and seniors. So you are significantly less likely to get COVID if you are fully vaccinated. you're exponentially less likely to end up in the hospital. And it is exceedingly rare for fully vaccinated individuals to end up passing away from COVID. Obviously, underlying health conditions and age are significant factors, but they would be for really any respiratory disease that those individuals encountered. So, yeah, I think the story here tonight is get vaccinated because it's going to protect you from unnecessary hospitalizations, and get vaccinated because it's going to protect the people next to you that might be more vulnerable.
Thank you, Frank. And as Sean just wrote in the chat, he had several underlying health conditions that were very serious. I got my booster shot last week. Thank you so much. It was smooth and easy and virtually painless. So I recommend it.
Thank you, Martha, for the public service announcement. People should do that. Mike Lane and then Shauna Black.
Just briefly, I want you folks to all know how much we do appreciate your doing this for each of our legislature meetings. I look at the beginning of your presentation at how many of these you've done, and it's a lot. It's a lot of preparation, we know. It's a lot of facts and figuring, and I realize you have to reach out to all of your staff to help on this, and they're important to us, too. But I just want you to know that we do appreciate it, and we know what a great job you're doing.
Thank you for that, Mike. Shauna.
Yes, I was wondering, it seems like every day I'm getting a call from the school district stating that there's a positive at one of my kids' schools. And are we seeing any community spread whenever we see positives in the schools?
So you have to define community spread. If you're asking, are we seeing it within the schools? No. We may have just come across our first case here in the last few days. We're still trying to effort that and figure out if there are other potential connections. But generally speaking, we're not seeing classroom or in-school transmission. There is certainly community spread going on because we're finding cases all the time where we can't determine necessarily where the location is, but the schools have been doing an amazing job. And I will point out that we're doing significantly less this school year than we did last year. Full classrooms are not being quarantined. The students are exempt from quarantine as long as they were at least 3 feet away and wearing masks. And so our school district's doing a great job with enforcing mask wearing has really limited the impact on students and will likely allow us to make further decisions here in the coming months about relaxing restrictions even further. So all of the things we're asking people to do are paying off. And over time, particularly as we get this next group of children vaccinated, is really going to put us in a good position to start getting back closer to normal.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that we're not seeing spread necessarily in the classrooms and that there would be a reconsideration if we see that we're doing the right thing right now. Thank you.
All right. Did I miss anyone else with a raised hand? Ann Corman?
As folks said, thanks again, Frank. This information is invaluable to us and our residents. We get a lot of questions, and thanks for what you, everybody at the EOC, the health department, everywhere is doing. And I just want to say I signed up for my booster shot. It's this Friday, and looking forward to getting that, and I encourage everybody to get one when you're eligible.
Thank you for your public service announcement, Annie. Anyone else? All right. Thank you very much, Amy, Frank, Dom, Lisa. Continued good work. Lisa, is there anything else from you?
That's it for me. Thank you.
That's it for you. All right. Moving on to our county attorney.
Yeah, a couple of things. Wanted to thank the legislature for appointing Bill Troy as the next county attorney. And I know he'll do a good job. He's an excellent attorney. I also wanted to note that Ward Hungerford, who was the county highway manager for many years, and certainly when I started, passed away this week.
I know a lot of you probably started after Ward left. But I'll tell you one story about Ward. It's just kind of about how great a highway manager he was. So I first moved to the county, or took the job. I was in Lansing, and I noticed the lines on the state 34B. They allowed passing where I thought it was unsafe for to allow passing. So I called Ward and I said, Ward, I know it's a state road, but could you, you know, but it seems unsafe to me. And Ward said, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. The next day I'm coming home from work and the state crew, not the county crew, the state crew is out there repainting the lines on 34B. And Ward was just one of these guys. He had the contacts and the initiative. He could get anything done. It wasn't, didn't matter whether it was a county road, a state road, a town road. He was just a terrific highway manager. And he passed away this week, and I'm sorry for that. I have nothing further.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Thank you for sharing it with Ward. Mike Lane.
Jonathan, thanks for mentioning Ward. Hungerford, as he always pronounced it. He didn't say Hungerford.
But I did.
What I remember most about Ward, and you're right, he was a great manager, was when we decided not to have a commissioner of public works anymore, and each of the departments that reported to that person, the manager stepped up. Ward stepped up and did a terrific job for us as the highway manager. And we were sorry when he left, and we're certainly sorry for sends our condolences to his family for that loss. Thanks for mentioning it.
Andy, thank you, Mike. Thank you, Jonathan. All right. Finance Director, Rick Schneider.
Thank you.
Bring on the good news.
Appreciate the opportunity to bring three revenue reports to you, or three reports to you tonight as requested. And before I get into the slides, I want to tell you about our auction preview, which we had last night at the Eagles Club. We had about 50 people show up, which was really a great showing, considering we only have 18 properties to auction next week. Our auction is scheduled for Monday, October 25th at 7:00 at the Eagles Club, and that's 18 properties for 2 years. That's 2 years worth of properties since we could not have our auction last year. We rolled them forward into this year. And out of the 2 years combined, we only have 18 properties on the auction block. So I was very pleased with the turnout last night for the information gathering for those folks that wanted to come to hear the auctioneer describe each of the properties. And we're looking forward to seeing how we do next Monday night, October 25th at 7:00. For the county's tax auction. So I'm going to turn first to our room tax report. I'm going to share my screen. Right now you should be able to view a table at the top that says room tax report. Are we looking at it?
Yes.
Thank you. Our third quarter room tax, which is on this third line here, of the report, shows that we collected $1.1 million in third quarter room tax revenue. That's 147.1% more than the third quarter of 2020. So that's a really good increase. That brings our total year-to-date room tax to $2.1 million. As you can see in that table there, that's looking at the whole ball of wax, both hotels and bed and breakfast. Hotels are shown by quarter in the middle section here of the chart. Bed and breakfasts are shown here coming in at $262,000 for the quarter compared to $880,000 for hotels. Total for the quarter, $1.1 million. So that was very pleasing to see quite a rebound in this important revenue source. I thought it was important to note that the percentage of tax-exempt sales fell from 50.1% tax-exempt in the first quarter down to 16.4% in the second quarter, and now way, way down to 8% in the third quarter, which is pretty much back to normal. Actually, lower than normal. Yes.
Can you tell me how that $2.1 million year-to-date figure compares to 2019?
I can't write off the I can tell you how it compares to our budget this year. Our budget for this year is only $1.9 million, so we've already exceeded our budget.
Well, that's good news. Thank you.
But I don't have the 2019 figure here in front of me. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
We scroll down. We look at
Rick. Rich, did you have a question before Rick continues?
Yes. If you could go back. It looks like the total of hotels and B&Bs doesn't add up to the 2151. And I'm wondering, is there another category? It looks like we're about $300,000 coming from somewhere else. Because you've got 1.305 million and 595 million or 595,000. So that's what, about 1.9?
Are you doing just the third quarter?
No, the total.
Oh, the total.
Liz, that's 240.
Because of the additional revenue, Rich.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that additional revenue is a place where we put monies that comes in from previous quarters. In other words, they're delinquent. They really don't belong
okay. In
quarter one, two, three, or four. And that additional revenue kind of distorts it because that's how we show it on this chart.
I understand. Thank you. Sorry to slow you down.
I don't really get too much involved at my level at the details of this. I always thank Nick Helmholt and Lisa Schott in the Treasury Division for working together to put these numbers. They have about four or five much more intricate graphs and tables that depict a lot more information. I just take this little snapshot of a summary to share with you. I thought you.
Thank you, Rick.
When we look at the number of reporting units, you can see that we have 137. I'll make that bigger here. 137 total establishments. 28 are the hotels. 109 are the bed and breakfasts. Out of all the hotels and motels, there's only three that are delinquent now, which is a much better number than previous quarters. Out of all the bed and breakfasts, we only have five that are late. Notes from the Treasury Division explain that for hotels, all establishments sent in returns and payments except for three. We have two of those three are owned by the same person. They haven't sent in or paid anything in 20 or 21. Treasury manager and accounting attorney's office are starting the legal collection process or what we're going to do next. But this particular hotel or these two hotels owned by the same person constantly and for, I've been told, almost up to 20 years, been paying late. So that only leaves one hotel and they're behind the second and third quarters, but they have been in contact with Lisa and they have paid all previous past delinquent quarters, all through 2020 and up to the first quarter of 2021. That should say first quarter of 2021, not 2022. So we're making some headway there on the delinquent status of hotels. Out of all the inns and beds and breakfasts, all establishments sent in returns except for five. Of those five, we, of course, sent delinquent letters. One responded positively, and we still have not heard back from four of them. So we're cutting down on the delinquencies. You can see by the really good revenue figures that have come in that we've already exceeded budget for the year, and I think we're on the rebound here. Any questions on room tax? Okay. Next, we'll look at the contingent fund. As you know, we started with $1.9 million in our contingent fund allocation. I've listed all of them, all the uses that were done through legislative action. Each time you pass a resolution, and you can see the total that we've used is 1.8 million out of the 1.9 million, which leaves only $49,000 left. Because we knew we were at the bottom of the barrel, we recommended last month that we be able to appropriate, as we did in 2020, another $1.6 million to take out of general fund reserves and to supplant our contingency fund. That will get us through the next 3 or 4 months, which we normally get a large amount of requests for uses from the contingency fund. And that resolution has been finished, and it's going through committee in November and will be coming to the legislature in November. So you'll be seeing a $1.6 million addition to the contingency fund to get us through 2021. Some of these uses on here are the reinstatement of some positions that were lost during 2020. Some of them are for new positions, and a bunch of others are for COVID-19, continued costs and expenses for COVID-19. Any questions on the use of contingency funds? Okay. The next thing I'm going to share, another slide to look at sales tax. You should be looking at the August distribution sheet for sales tax. And if you go to the middle section of the sheet, you can see that the sales tax for August, the month, was up 22.16%. That happens to be the best August on county record. So we went from, just in the month of August, we went from 2.7 million in 2020 to 3.3 million in August of 21. At the end of August, over here on the right-hand side, you'll see that the distributions are up to 25.7 million compared to 21.2 million in 2020. That's an increase of $5,167,000 year over year, and a 21.26% increase year over year. That's just for August. We also have September's to bring you right up to date. But, of course, I always give you, and as of the end of September, we're at 73.9% of budget, August, and we only should have been at about 67%. Here's the graph up through August. Parallels very much our activity in 2019. But we do have one more month to share, and that's the September numbers, which were remarkably good. You can see here the county portion in the midsection. We came at 15.84% higher in September than the year before. And let's see. If you're wondering how that compares to 2019, which goes back 1 year before, that's 2.2% over 2019. So that's a very good September. As of the end of September, the county's portion was $30,525,023 compared to $25,358,000 back in 2020. That's an increase of $5,167,021 year over year, or up 20.38%. We're three quarters of the way through the year, and compared to budget down here, you can see we're at 87.6% of budget, which is higher than the required 75%, which is what we should be at. So we're doing very well on sales tax. The graph here shows it going off the charts almost. I had to increase the size of the chart just to reach this close to 4.78 million dollars for the month of September. And then we have any questions on August or September, because now I have a quarter to date chart to share with you also. Okay. The third quarter shows all 3 months rolled together. We're up 18.9% if we just compare this third quarter to the 2020 third quarter. And this also, just like the month of September, this third quarter happens to be the highest third quarter on record. In fact, it's actually the highest quarter of any quarter on record. So we just have the highest sales tax per quarter record here at $11.5 million coming in 3 months. And the very last piece, which I emailed all these documents to you earlier today so that you would have them. But as I knew you would get the email and be able to look at these, I always include this year over year comparison with every quarter right up to date. It ends with this very brief first, second, third, fourth period record that shows the county share of sales tax, the town's share of sales tax, and the city share of sales tax. Any questions on this?
No.
I thought you might ask, well, what's our projection for the end of the year? Because that question has come up quite a bit. So I did one more slide where I took exactly where we were at right now. And I, let me see if I can move it over here. It's getting away from me. I plugged in the same values for the last 3 months that were the same as 2019, just to give you an estimate. And so if we get the same amount of money in October, November, and December as we did in 2019, that extends the table to where we'll make $40.4 million in sales tax for this year. Our budget is $34.5 million, so we'll come in approximately $5.8 million over budget. So that's with 9 months in, and only the last three numbers for October, November, and December are estimates. And that is all I have for tonight.
Well, you can bring that again and again. That was great. Thank you very much. Any questions for Henry?
Yes, Rick, do you have any sense of how the casino revenue is doing?
No, we didn't get them yet, Henry. I was hoping we'd get them. Sometimes we do get them by mid-October, And I probably will get them in the next few days, but we have not received them yet. So I have that out of my calendar to bring that to you at our first meeting in November. But
have we already exceeded the budgeted amount in casino revenue in the first two quarters?
I think so.
Okay.
And then it'll just be gravy when we get the rest of it.
Yeah, let me look. I think Martha was commenting on this the other day, and she remembered exactly where we were at, but let's see, casino revenues. I think we're already with just half the year. Yeah, with half the year, and we're at $933,000 that have come in already. So I believe we're already ahead of budget or close to it. But I will have a more formal presentation when those numbers come in. We always have to wait for the state. They send us Del Lago and Tioga on the same day, and that will – that also will be helpful as we record that quarter will be extra for us in the general fund this year.
Yeah, thanks. Well, you know, you'll bring it to us, Rick, as soon as you get it.
I will.
Anyone else? Like I said, it'll just be gravy. Anyone else? Thank you, Rick. That was a stellar report.
Thank you.
We like that.
You're welcome.
Last year, you all were predicting how bad we're going to come in this year. You're predicting how well we'll come in. I like that. Let's keep it up. There are no other questions to Rick. Let's, thank you, Rick. Let's take a quick break. And, did I miss something?
Jay is waiting for us.
Oh, who?
Jay Franklin, I think, might be waiting.
Oh, I kept asking, Jay, what are you waiting for? I didn't see Jay on there.
The conservation easement on Geos.
All right. Won't we just – sorry, Jay. I kept asking. I didn't see the phone. Amanda?
Yeah.
Why don't you go ahead, Amanda Champion, Chair of GO, take up Resolution E. So Jay does not have to sit there the whole time.
All right. Just so you know, my internet is a little unstable, so if I cut out, Dan will have to jump in. So I will move Resolution E, urging New York State to adopt a conservation easement exemption for Tompkins County, ID 10411.
Seconded by Dan Klein. Discussion. Go ahead, Amanda.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, Jay can talk to it as well, but we had a discussion about this a couple months ago at GO, and then we brought it back this month. And it's based on the fact that the town of Danby put in or was asking for a similar easement exemption, and Jay suggested to us that we should petition the state to make this available for the whole county. So it's not just one municipality in our county. So we talked about it. We made a few changes and we felt like we came to a good conclusion where, correct me if I'm wrong, someone who puts their property into a conservation easement would get a, they put it into a easement or an easement for perpetuity, sorry, they would get a 50% exemption on their tax bill. So I think that covers it, but I'm sure Jay could speak to it more.
All right, well, let me see if others have questions. Leslie, go ahead.
I'm going to support this, but I'd like to make an amendment. I noticed a little bit of the language might need to be refined.
All right, go ahead and make your amendment.
C. So on the second result, line 20, I would amend that we say resolved further that for Tompkins County, the exemption shall be for a perpetual conservation eligible for 50% reduction in taxable value. Over and seconder?
Friendly.
Could you say that again?
Just grammar.
Resolved further that for Tompkins County, the exemption shall be for a perpetual conservation eligible for 50% reduction in taxable value and.
Yeah, that's friendly.
Friendly. Like friendly. All right, Martha.
Didn't that say for perpetual conservation easement?
I think that's right, Martha.
I think it could, yeah, we could add in the word easement to make it clearer.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. I support, like, trying to treat all the towns the same. However, I have some problems with this. I asked and was told public access is not expected or required for people to get a 50% tax break. So I'm not clear what the, this feels like an exemption that's available to people who can afford to own a lot of land. And I don't know that I support that. The Finger Lakes Land Trust, for example, does a very careful job. They don't take any old, you know, open space or forest. They are very strategic and careful about looking for parcels, looking for properties that have particular environmental value. So I'm, you know, I'm really, this feels like a giveaway to people that other people are going to have to pay their taxes. And I, at the moment, I'm voting against it. I don't understand why it's a plus.
All right. So Martha's registering that she'll vote no. Jay or Amanda, is there anything you want to share? Jay, I saw you had unmuted in terms of what Martha just said.
Well, I just want to say I'm not here to advocate for or against this exemption. You've all heard my spiel before, so I'm only here to provide information. So the reason why I brought this forward to you is when the town of Danby got New York State to pass their legislation, included in that was the possibility that any school district that's in Danby or the county could offer that exemption once Danby offered it. I didn't feel that was fair that the county would offer an exemption just for one town. So if the county was going to consider that exemption, then we should consider it for the county as a whole.
The entire county.
Also, I didn't, since not every town had a conservation board, what we also included in this was to have it be a qualified kind of land trust. Because we didn't want it to go to the J. Franklin Land Trust, and then in 5 years, that perpetual easement's returned to the property owner. So hopefully through this, we'll be able to get good language that I've worked with Scott Doyle on to come up with that qualifying organization. And, of course, we'll work with Assemblywoman Kellis's office and whoever's going to be writing this legislation to make sure that this is for legitimate conservation easements.
Follow up. Go ahead.
So you mean it's not just that somebody says, oh, okay, I'm not going to build on that extra 20 acres I own, so let's call it a conservation easement. You're saying they're going to have to sign an agreement with somebody like the town of Danby or with a conservation board or the land trust? Is that what you're saying?
Correct. But that way there could be some review as to which properties should be conserved, and not just any property could be eligible for this.
So it's not as of right. There's actually going to be review.
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
Okay, thank you. That's better.
Deborah.
Yeah, I just wanted to note that that was clear in the third result. It's not my perception that guaranteeing public access is the only value we're trying to protect here. If we're conserving properties that need to be conserved and not farmed or developed, that's the whole point.
Okay. Thank you, Deborah. Amanda?
Deborah said basically it. You know, I mean, the important part for me is that we're protecting land, and if someone has, you know, a chunk of land that they don't want developed for whatever reason, you know, this is a way to offer them an exemption. I would just note that when this first came to us, Jay had in there, you know, different levels of exemption based on how many years a person would put it into a conservation easement. And we had a good discussion about that, you know, putting something into a easement for 15 years isn't, that really would just be benefiting that one owner. But we're talking about, you know, in perpetuity. So if, you know, you die and your property passes on to the next person, they would still have to honor that easement. So that's all.
Thank you, Amanda. Dan, Anthony, Annie.
Thank you. I want to say something truly not to refute what you were saying, but to make an important point. With this, it could benefit someone who's wealthy and has a lot of land, but what's more exciting to me is that this can benefit the people that are land rich and money poor, which is a lot of people I know and a lot of people who live in my district. This is a way for them to actually be able to hold on to their land and for the benefit of everybody and not be burdened as much with the taxes. So that's what's most exciting about conservation easements to me. Thanks.
Thank you. Anne.
Thank you. What if somebody puts their property into an easement now, what is the reduction in taxable value? Or is there none?
Right now, there is no reduction in taxable value. That right to develop is still a right that I have to value, even though it's held by a different organization. So we have to value property as if all those bundle of rights are contained by that owner. So there is an income tax break that they're eligible to get, provided they get good appraisals. But as for a property tax break, there isn't one.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Do you really have to? Hey, want to bring us to a vote in the break? Martha and then Leslie.
Leslie, hang on up first.
Somebody speak.
Okay. But just to add on, one other encouragement for this is that for folks that might be able to qualify for this easement, this may take some development pressure off of some natural lands or high quality lands. But allowing those folks to afford that, right, to maintain that land in its natural state, and that makes it affordable for them so that it doesn't have to be subdivided and potentially developed in order that they can maintain their life.
Thank you. Go ahead, Martha.
Yeah, this is one of those examples where the conversation actually changed the mind. I mean, what you said, Dan, like I know lots and lots of farmers have this development pressure, so this could help in that. So as long as there is an agreement with an established organization. And Jay, is there any problem with enforcement? Do you see anything that's, you know, as property changes hands, will there be any challenges to your office?
Not to my office, but any time you add an easement to one of the qualifying organizations, there is a burden, a cost, responsibility on them to monitor that. So, but their pros, at least the Finger Lakes Land Trust in monitoring these types of arrangements.
Okay, thanks very much.
All right, Annie, do you have your hand up again?
No, I didn't realize I have to put it down.
That's
but,
all right.
But if I could just say one more thing, do we want to encourage the other, the smaller municipalities to also send a resolution to New York State?
I don't know that, but along with this is similar to what we did with the housing trust. If we were to adopt this, then the other taxing jurisdictions could also choose to adopt this as well. So that may be something to drum up more support for the state to allow us to be able to adopt this.
Okay, thank you.
All right, people. Let's vote.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Schill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Donna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. That carries unanimously. Thank you, Amanda. Thank you, Jay. Let's take a 10-minute break and be back here at 8 o'clock.
Leslie, could I pause here for a second, please?
Second. Go.
I did find an answer to Henry's question on casino revenues here, and I'm just going to share this real quick. For the year, we made $933,000 with just two quarters reporting so far. Our budget for the year was only $675,000. So with half the year being recorded, we've already are in excess of budget by $258,000 with two more quarters yet to report. So that could be another $1 million coming in until we see the second half of the year come in. Just thought I'd answer that for Henry's.
Well, thank goodness it was good news. Otherwise, I'd be mad at you, but thank you.
All right.
All right. That's pretty good. Thank you, Rick. Let's take a break, folks. And we'll be back here at 8 o'clock. Do I have a quorum? Let me know you're on screen so I know that I have a quorum. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and yes, we do. All right, we're resuming our meeting. Let's try and power through the rest of this. That was a good way to end, to go into a break, Rick, so thank you. We did our consent agenda. Are there any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda?
Rick has his hand up.
I think that's an old hand up. And he's gone. Nothing? Okay, so let's move on to our standing and special committee reports. Starting with government operations, Amanda Champion, chair.
Government operations met on October 7th, which I think was after the previous legislature meeting, but I've lost track of time these days. We had a lot of good discussions, including the one about the conservation easement that we just voted on. We had two presentations from Dominic Recchio, our communications director. He shared with us something he's been working on for quite a while about county branding information. So this would be kind of standards that departments could use for, you know, the seal of the county and colors to use on websites and fonts and all kind of, you know, like ideas and sort of a set plan that departments could use. So we gave him a little bit of feedback. He's also talked to the Public Information Advisory Board about this, and it's certainly not set in stone, and it wouldn't be, you know, a mandate that came down. But he is going to work with departments to kind of start moving people in a direction so we have some consistency with that. He also gave us a rundown of the email newsletter program that he's instated, which some of you may know about, but we all and residents and constituents can now sign up for a huge range of newsletters based on the topics that they're interested in. So you can go to the website, you can pick, you know, planning department issues or health department updates or reports from the DA, that sort of thing. So that's a really cool new thing that we can connect with our residents about. We also had a brief discussion about downtown, the downtown campus parking. We didn't come to any conclusions, but it's good to revisit that every now and again. And then we just have the other resolution that I have, amending the rules of the legislature.
All right. Are there any questions for Amanda and her report? If not, Amanda, go ahead with your resolution.
All right. So this is Resolution F, amending Rules 5 and 17 of the legislature, Legislator Code of Conduct, Rules of the Legislature, ID 10417, and I would move that.
And let's see, Shell.
And then I guess if I could just say, you know, this is something that we have talked about for a while, just trying to put together a sort of code of conduct for legislators. And instead of coming up with a whole new document, we have the code of ethics, we have all our rules of the legislature. We thought that we would just take what rules we already have. Rules 5 and 17 already address some of these things and, you know, change some of the language and add in some new things. So we have been talking about it for a couple of months, and you have a clean version in your packet as well as a redline version, which you can't actually see the colors, but yeah, you can see the changes there.
Thank you, Amanda. Martha?
Thanks, Amanda. This is, you know, a lot of work. I really appreciate that the subcommittee is taking this on and the full GO is taking it on. On lines, like the lines 23 and 4 on packet page 27, this question of the chair making, you know, making ruling, and if there's a question, shall the ruling of the chair be overruled? The fact that I'm a little uncomfortable with the fact that the chair can explain the reason for the decision, but there's no debate. So there's no response by the legislature. A couple of us were talking about this, and I think the issue, if this is specifically with respect to order and decorum issues, I wonder if we could add that, that would make that feel okay.
Yeah, definitely. I think that came up in another place too. I mean, and it is under the, you know, rule titled order and decorum, but if people feel comfortable adding that in so there's no confusion, we can certainly do that.
So I was thinking, if it said, if an appeal is requested about a decision of the chair concerning order and decorum, the chair shall have the right, da, da, da. If that would be a little more explicit, that's okay.
That is friendly to me. I don't know who the seconder was.
Leslie. Thumbs up. Second, it's friendly.
Thank you.
Anything else? Going once, going twice. Let's vote on it.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Show?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
From the being Claiborne?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
That carries unanimously. Thank you. Anything else from you, Amanda?
Nope. Government operations will meet again the first Thursday of November at noon.
Thank you. Let's move on to Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Ann Corman, Chair.
Thanks, Madam Chair. We have not had a meeting
since our last legislative meeting. And coming up for this meeting, we don't have a lot on the agenda. One of the things that we do have that's important is a resolution to extend the case board. And that was written up by Darby Kiley from our planning department. And so we have possibly extra time on the agenda. So I'm going to just encourage members of the committee, if they have any reports or things from that they want to report on, anything from their liaison committees, that there'll be definitely be time to do that. So I'll encourage people to do that. That's all I have. Oh, and now, so that's our meeting is next Monday, the 25th at 1:30.
All right. Thank you, Ann. Any questions for Ann? Okay. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Deborah Dawson, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we get into the adoption of amendments to the budget, I just wanted to let you all know that I heard from Bill Talbot at TC3 today. He wanted us to know that the Cortland County Finance Committee has voted to approve Cortland County's share of the college's capital program match for SUNY grants with in-kind services, and that the full Cortland County Legislature will vote on that later next week. So with that, I've got Resolution G, which doesn't have the blanks filled in. I assume that's probably okay because I understand from email traffic earlier this afternoon that people will be offering and debating changes to the budget we agreed on at our last EBC meeting. So I guess the first thing I ought to do is move Resolution G, Adoption of Amendments to the 2022 Tompkins County Budget and 2022-2026 Capital Program, Doc ID 10437, with blanks to be filled in.
I think those blanks have already been filled in, and they were emailed out to folks. And in
oh, I didn't get that.
Oh, I have a second by Mike Lane.
No, hold it.
It's in your, well, those chambers, it's in your red folders. And Kathy,
you know,
letting me know it was emailed out well.
Okay.
There's an email from Brittany. So would you like us to read what those blanks are?
I think that
yes,
would be
please.
Helpful, please.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, and the first whereas, the date is October 13th, 2021. And in the first resolved, the first blank, 53,004,970, resulting in an approximate tax levy increase of 1.16%. A countywide average tax rate of $6.17 per thousand, a decrease of 0.67%. Second resolved is resolved further that because the value of a median priced home increased from $200,000 in 2020 to $205,000 in 2021, the tentative budget as amended results in an increased tax payment of $0.46. on a median priced home, or a total county tax payment of approximately $1,265. And that's it. And that last statement I read in the second resolve is the amendment that was approved at the expanded budget meeting.
Right. Can you just please repeat that? The increased tax payment in the second resolved results in an increased tax payment of, you faded out there.
In the first result?
Second result.
Second result.
$22.46. It's a tax payment of $22.46 on Priced Home for a total county tax payment of approximately $1,265.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you. So moved and seconded. Discussion. I'll take Mike. Oh, go ahead, Mike.
I want to say when we started this, I said it was going to be a tough time. I think we had some spirited debates. We had wonderful presentations. I think we've come forward with a series of amendments to the administrator's budget that are reasonable, defensible, and make sense in this time of COVID. We know we have things like labor negotiations to go through, for example. And I just am kind of proud of this legislature as one member. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for mentioning the word amendment, Mike, because I would like to move an amendment to the resolution as presented. I would like to move an amendment to appropriate $605,511 from unassigned fund balance to achieve a 0% change in the levy.
Second.
Seconded by Dan Klein. Discussion. Martha.
So I see Dan Nolan here. I wonder if he can grab the, we can see the big sheet that he usually does, the spreadsheet.
Sure can.
Thank you. And I would, while we're waiting, well, there we go. You know, we got our tax bill from the school district this week or last week. And, you know, I had to sit down. That is by far the biggest hit on any of us. But it comes at the same time as, you know, this one does to us as this vote. So, I'm certainly sympathetic to this, but I would like to amend this so that I'll just talk about the intention, and I don't know how we do it, but I would like this relief to come from increasing our estimate on the sales tax number rather than having come out of the fund balance. And I would also actually support a higher number than 605,000. But I'll just put that out there. Well, I see you can't amend an amendment. This
nope.
is actually a motion, right? This is a motion, and Leslin's is an amendment. So, in fact, I could amend Leslin's action.
Yes.
I'm just
only
I'm just
after it passes.
No, no. This is a resolution. This is not an amendment. Leslin's is the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
The next action would be the Second Amendment.
Correct.
But right now I'm not making that amendment. I'm starting a conversation. So I think that what we heard about the sales tax was impressive. Like you kind of want to swoon about it. It's great. I think it's much more legitimate and correct to increase that recurring line rather than take it out of fund balance. But I won't make that motion yet. But I just wanted to toss that out there.
Deborah, and then Mike Lane, and then Henry.
Well, speaking to Martha's point, does it really make a difference? If it comes out of fund balance this year or next year, it's that fund balance is still going to be increased to the extent that our sales tax revenue for this year exceeds budget so that it'll go right into the unassigned general fund balance, will it not?
That is correct.
Okay, well, so, you know, this is a distinction without a difference, saying where we're going to take it out of. I think the real question is, are we going to take it out?
Okay, thank you, Jeff, for my claim.
Yeah, I won't support the amendment. I hope other folks don't. We had this debate more than once during the expanded budget committee. Let's pass the original resolution. Let's move on.
Okay. Well, I just want to say that up until all the time, we still have the opportunity to make amendments to the tentative budget. Even after we adopt the tentative budget, we still have an opportunity to make amendments. So nobody is going out of order. Henry.
Yes. I sent an email around this afternoon as a counterproposal to Lesden's proposal. If people think that we're swimming in cash, it's because we got $19 million from the federal government for ARP funding. And so I do believe, and plus we have also, we just heard, our fund balance is high. We also have heard that our taxes, our sales tax revenue will exceed or probably will exceed a budget amount. The casino money will exceed the budgeted amount. Mortgage tax will exceed the budget amounts. And so what I suggest is that we do a win-win situation. We also fund the rescue fund up to $8 million total, without any budgetary removals of the approximately $500,000. I think it sends a sign to the people that we are doing well, and that we should share more of the wealth with them. Because I don't think that, you know, lowering the tax levy is going to be enough. I think we ought to do more, and we have the chance to do more.
Thank you, Henry. I just want to keep those two things separate. I have one amendment I'm putting on the table, but thank you.
Well, I think we can put two things on the table at the same time.
Point of order, Madam Chair. The community recovery plan is separate and has nothing to do with our budget for 2022. We can afterwards.
Well, since we're taking funds out of the recovery, out of the rescue plan, the fund part of the budget, I think it does have something to do with it.
If you're not making amendments, I'm moving on. Shauna.
Yeah, I personally do not care if we use fund balance or we estimate the sales tax revenue to be a little bit more accurate. I am all for this passing, and however it's going to pass, I'll vote for it. So let's get it done.
Thank you. All right, so there is an amendment on the table. Martha.
I'll agree with that, Shauna. Okay. But it is connected to the budget, because in four or five of the motions that we made on the budget, there was a very specific caveat that said, okay, we'll pass this thing if we take that off the top of the recovery fund. So instead of up to 7 million, we have up to 6.5 million in the recovery fund. I think whether you call it a handshake, whatever you call it, my support to do this to lower the tax levy, I'll just go ahead and say it's contingent on a handshake agreement that says we're going to increase the recovery fund, because we absolutely can. Every single report we have shows that we are already over budget on a number of our big revenues, and we're going to do even more coming in. I could I could explain it 16 different ways, but we can absolutely afford up to $8 million on the recovery fund, as well as bring the tax levy to zero.
So I'd like to encourage people that if you want to bring a separate resolution about the recovery fund, that you can do that. But I'm not inclined to tie this one to the recovery fund. And vote it up or vote it down. Deborah, Annie, Amanda, and then let's decide what we're doing.
I've spoken once already, Madam Chair. I'll let Annie and Amanda go.
Your hand was up.
That's
Annie.
Okay.
Thanks. I had a question regarding whether we changed the projected, I think was the question, is that we change our projected revenue for the sales tax for next year?
That is not what's on the table in the amendment. That was a conversation Martha wanted to start to see if that's a way to go with the amendment instead.
If I can explain, I don't have my budget book here, but if there's a page, I think it's section 2, page 2, that has the whole big summary of the budget on one page. And towards the bottom, it has sales tax and other unallocated revenue. If you change that number, it changes all the other numbers on the bottom line there. So Sean is right. Leslie's right. It's a little bit arbitrary. Deborah's right. It's a little bit arbitrary which piece of it you change. So I'll concede that part. I think it's much more intellectually correct to actually recognize the sales tax revenue. But that's a mechanism, but it's not up here, I don't think. There's no place that Dan's spreadsheet that we're looking at includes the sales tax estimate.
Okay. Thank you, Martha. Annie, was there more?
So to be clear, it sounds like it wouldn't, if we approve this, it wouldn't, wherever we take, if we take the money unassigned fund balance, then it wouldn't change.
Correct.
So taking it out of sales tax or putting it somewhere else wouldn't change how much we had available in the unassigned fund balance next year, for instance, to use for ARPA funds?
Nope.
Okay. Thank you.
Amanda.
So thank you. I'm happy to support this, but I want to clarify what we're doing, because I think you're proposing, Leslyn, an amendment to the tentative budget. You're not proposing new language in this particular resolution. So,
no, I'm proposing an amendment, yes.
So I guess my question then to Kathy is, how does that work? It's an amendment that we're just adding into this, then the numbers in there in this resolution would change. Is that correct?
Yes, and that's why Dan has this magic screen up here, because if that passes, it'll flip all those numbers, and then we can.
Okay, so Leslyn's amendment cannot be amended. We either have to vote yes or no, and then someone else can offer another amendment. Okay.
No, just it can be amended at least once. My amendment can be amended at least once.
That's correct.
What? I don't think so.
No, you can't amend an amendment.
You can't amend an amendment, and this is an amendment.
You can amend a
motion.
Yes, you can.
This is a motion. Leslyn's action is the first amendment to the motion.
Right.
We're not the expanded budget committee anymore that was amending the proposed budget. We're the legislature looking at a main motion here. This is what was in our packet. So this is Leslyn's is the first amendment.
Can Jonathan answer? He just popped up.
So you can amend an amendment once, but not twice. However, I will say there really is no amendment to the amendment on the table now.
Correct.
Okay.
So can we vote?
I have a question that I
preferred.
I would ask that Daniel tell us what this amendment that Leslin has offered will do to our tax rate. And the reason that I want to know that is because we need to remain aware that anything we do to the tax rate is going to have compounding effects in years going forward. And as much as I would like to support Leslin's proposal, as much as I would like not to increase our levy because I understand that everybody's hurting, I'm not sure that that's the responsible thing to do when we look at next year and the year after. At some point, if we do this, we're going to have to pay the piper by having a fairly hefty increase in our tax rate. And people aren't going to be any happier about that next year or the year after, just because, you know, the pandemic and the economic aftermath of the pandemic is farther behind us. So, Daniel, I'd appreciate knowing what that number would be. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Daniel, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No problem. I was just going to say, yeah, sure. So what we can do here is essentially add the proposed pollution amount in. The tax rate would then drop from $6.21 per $1,000 to $6.10 per $1,000.
Not a big hit.
No.
Yeah, it's not about a big hit. Yeah. No,
all right.
It's not a big hit.
Thank you, Danielle. Let me get Dan.
Thank you. I just want to address this issue again about paying the piper. It is, of course, true. Money has to come from somewhere at some point. There are two ways to pay the piper, and you just described a way which would be raising taxes, and that will happen if we don't have a good source of revenue. Our revenue doesn't come in strongly. The other way to pay the piper is to increase your revenue. So it's a gamble, just like everything in budgeting is a gamble. You hope you will get as much revenue as you want. If you don't, you have to raise taxes. So I just want to say it's not automatic that we have to increase taxes to pay for this action that's being proposed right now. We only have to do it if we have bad times ahead, bad revenue ahead.
Thank you. Yes, Martha.
So I will make an amendment, but let me first say, I could spend time that nobody wants to listen. Nobody wants me to bother going through all the categories where we're going to make significantly more money than the county administrator's budget projects. That's good because we want our administrator and our finance director to be conservative. We want them to be careful. But I think all of these benefits that we're seeing, all this, and by the way, increase in sales tax, it's also coming from our taxpayers because, you know, gas is going up, all the rest. I think there are two ways to give back to the community, and one is to lower the tax levy, and I'm going to support that. The other is to increase what we give to the community, and the community fund is a way to give back in a targeted way, to give back to support critical needs that need the kind of extra resources that we happen to have right now. We have all understood from the beginning that the recovery fund will be for one-time expenses. They won't be continuing burdens on the taxes we bring in. But I think what our community is saying is, you guys looking real, sitting real pretty. We're over here hurting. So I would like to amend Leslin's amendment so that it's $605,511 from the fund balance to lower the rate, lower the levy, and with the understanding that the recovery fund will be increased to up to $8 million. I also would say that if we remember, Deborah was worried about.
Can I get a vote on your amendment, a second on your amendment, Martha, before you
talk?
I second it.
Okay, seconded by Henry.
And just one more thing is that even though the rate is going to go down, as everyone of our constituents knows, their assessments are probably going up.
Yes.
So that balances the drop in the rate.
Yes. I was going to say that earlier because we still have to take that into consideration. Lisa.
I just wanted to make a point of clarification. The increased revenues that Martha, I believe you were referring to, are on the 2021 budget projections, the increase in casino revenue, sales tax revenues. They're not part of the 2022 budget projections.
I understand, but they also feed into the fund balance, which is where the 605 is coming from, which is where the recovery fund is coming from
That's
as well.
Correct.
All right, let's just vote on the amendment. Is it Martha has an amendment on the table right now? Oh, Lord, yeah.
Can we go back to gallery view so we can see each other? Is that? Thank you.
I need a repeat of the amendment so that there's clarity on what it is you're asking, Martha.
It probably should be another resolved. That the intention is an additional intention is that the recovery fund will be increased to up to $8 million.
Okay.
I know it's not actually in this budget, but I think we all understand what that would mean.
Okay. So further discussion?
Can I just ask a point of clarification so that I understand what we're voting on?
Mm-hmm.
So we're voting on the twice amended resolution for the budget. Is that accurate?
We're voting on the second amendment.
We're voting on the second amendment, which is to increase the recovery fund up to $8 million.
But it also includes your amendment?
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
I thought the vote is that it would become part of the main motion.
It'll be, if it's accepted, it becomes part of Leslin's amendment, and then we vote on it again.
Right, that's good.
It would
right.
become part of the main, yes.
Correct. Everybody clear on that? So my amendment was to appropriate $605,511 from unassigned fund balance to achieve a 0% change in the tax levy. Martha is now amending this to say, in addition, increase the recovery fund up to $8 million. So if you vote for what Martha is proposing, okay, it will be to increase the recovery fund to $8 million. And at the same time, $605,000, blah, 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 to reduce the tax, to have a 0% increase in tax levy. Everybody clear? All right, let's vote.
No, we can speak
to Martha's amendment of your amendment.
Yes, let's just vote.
Well, you've got hands up.
And I have hands.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I don't know what order you all were in, so I'm just going across my screen. Deborah.
Yeah, I just cannot support this. I understand we feel like we're in high cotton right now, but we don't know what's going to happen to the economy in
3 months. If anybody's paying attention to what's going on nationally, we could be circling the drain in January or February. There is no reason why we cannot wait and see where we are in 6 months and add to the community recovery plan at that time. All I want to say is I think it's imprudent and fiscally irresponsible to feel flush because we're getting good budget reports and try to spend it all as fast as we can when we don't know what's coming down the pike. If you had asked us in December of 2019 how healthy we would be throughout 2020, we would have said, oh, yeah, hey, we're doing great. And look what happened. Please, people, learn from history.
All right. Thank you, Deborah. Henry, Dave McKenna, and Dan, and Daniel.
Yes, we did, in fact, in 2019, I believe, lower the tax levy, which we did before, you know, not knowing. I don't hear anybody regretting that decision now. And so I don't feel that it makes sense to in fact, the people perceive that we received $19 million, which we did. We went cash for capital, which will give us $1.6 million every year, which would cover, in fact, the amount that we're talking about increasing the recovery fund, which is a guarantee, right? And so I feel like, you know, again, we at least talked about maybe giving out $15 million or $12 million. Now we've got $8 million for 1 year, and that's it. And all you keep talking about what? And you keep talking about the money. Excuse me?
I said go ahead.
Okay. You keep talking about the money being spent as fast as possible. We got the money in May. Not a dime has been spent yet except for the budget items that we put in for the recovery, for the rescue fund. And we're talking about May, we're talking about March to spending it or May, whatever. We don't even have a process yet. Where other counties have in fact doled out millions of dollars already. And so again, I just see us as being sort of, you know, being wanting to remove the tax levy, but not want to give the people back the ARP funding, which again, it was a stimulus fund, which is again, we're not using it for that. Because we're not, you know, they're not stimulating anything except for cash for capital. So again, I think that this is a small step. In terms of allocating funding. And yeah, tomorrow we could, in fact, you know, the economy could tank. That's a chance we have to take, but that's also a chance. Tax levy too. We're taking a chance and we can tell people, oh yeah, remember when we
you're going in and out?
What?
You are going in and out. Like half of what you just said a minute ago, I don't know anybody heard.
Okay. Well, you get my point is that we have $1.6 million for the next 10 years. We have $4 million in over tax revenue. We have $1 million in computer revenue.
You're doing it again, Henry.
We can't hear you.
All right, Henry, I would say we get the point because we can't hear you anymore. Dave McKenna.
Okay. I truly think we ought to separate these issues. They're not the same. I can support Leslin's plan. I tend to agree with whoever it was that said, let's wait 6 months or so and then reevaluate going to the $8 million. I set it aside, intention on doing that. But let's keep the money in the treasury till we know what's going on in the world. That's my two cents.
All right. Ralph, I'm just going to take this to a vote.
Tell me, just by saying up to $8 million, then that obviously leaves the legislature plenty of wiggle room if it doesn't work out, you know, in February or March. It's just a signal to the community.
All right, let's vote on the amendment to the amendment. Martha's amendment.
Mike Lane?
No.
Dave McKenna?
No.
Glenn Morey?
No.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Schill?
No.
Mike Sigler?
No.
Shauna Black?
No.
Amanda Champion?
No.
Deborah Dawson?
No.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
No.
Dan Klein?
No.
Ann Corman?
No.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
No.
You have 2 ayes, 12 noes.
All right. So we're back to the original amendment, which is, hopefully I got that number right, $605,511 from unassigned fund balance to reduce to achieve 0% tax levy increase. Discussion. Martha.
I would like us to vote on replacing the $454,000 that we knocked off $7 million. So I'd like
Can you bring a separate resolution, a separate amendment on that, or are you tying it now?
So could I then make a separate motion, just a motion from the floor? Okay, yeah. I'll wait.
All right, so let's vote on the amendment that's on the floor.
Mike Lane?
No.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Schill?
No.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? I want to make sure I understand this.
The amendment that I made is what's being voted on now.
Okay. Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
No.
Henry Granison?
No.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
10 ayes, 4 noes.
Okay, so that passes, and that now becomes the main resolution that's on the floor. Other amendments. Okay, seeing none, let's vote then on the amended resolution. For the tentative budget.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Schill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
No.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 1 no.
Okay. So this budget with the changes then is what goes to the public hearing. No.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, that's correct.
And that's scheduled for November 9th at 7 p.m.
Now, there's still, I'm sure that it's clear that we have opportunities to continue to amend the budget up until we have the public hearing and we vote on it. Because now what this did is amend the budget that the county administrator presented to us. The legislature did its due diligence, as Mike Lane earlier said, made some amendments, blah, 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 and now this becomes the tentative budget, which is going to public hearing. Martha.
So two things. Wonder if Dan or Kathy can read the resolution with the new numbers, and then I will make a motion when we're done with that. So it's So the tax levy increase is zero, correct?
Yeah, all the numbers will change, I think.
Yes, sorry, I'm trying to figure out a way to jump back and forth between Zoom and the spreadsheets. Hold on 1 second, and I will have it up for you momentarily. Making a quick adjustment to get it actually put in here in the proper format because the chair's resolution is a separate resolution. Okay. $0. Sorry, one moment, please. All right, and here we go. All right, this is the new amendment for $605,511. And here are the numbers. I don't have the language. Unfortunately, there's a lot of things going on my screen. I don't have the language of the resolution in front of me right now, but if you'd like to, Kathy, would you be able to read it, and we can walk through it, or would you like me, like we did last time, or would you like me to, just give you numbers and then you read it through?
I can't read the chart from where I'm sitting.
No worries.
So, Lisa said she can.
Okay. The total tax levy amount, if you scroll back there, Dan, $52,399,459 results in an approximate tax levy increase of 0% and a countywide average tax rate of 6.10 per thousand, a decrease of what percent is the decrease?
That would be 1.81%. Yes, 1.81%.
Really?
And the increase in the median price home would be $8.02.
$8.02,
yes.
Thank you.
Or a total county tax payment of approximately?
For the median price home, it would, the taxes in the median price home would be $1,250 approximately.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll get a cleaned up resolution so that everybody can have the right numbers. Thank you. Martha.
So thank you, Leslie, for bringing this up. It's sometimes, you know, once we kind of button up those voting meetings, it's hard to like bring stuff back again, but this is important to do. I appreciate it. I'd like to make a motion from the floor just that the recovery fund, and I can do whereas as if you want them or whatever, but the recovery fund allocation that is intended for that purpose would be up to $7 million. And this is to basically restore, there's approximately $454,000 that was ledgered against the recovery fund during our votes on the budget. So to restore the recovery fund up to $7 million.
So Martha's bringing a resolution on the floor to restore recovery funds monies up to $7 million. Is that a second, Leslie? Seconded by Leslie Schill. Kathy?
I think we may need a ruling from the county attorney that this would have to be added to the agenda.
County attorney?
I understand what Kathy's saying. The amendment seems apart from the budget that you're voting on. So, I mean, that's probably right. It's not really an amendment to the budget. Right. I'm not really sure what it is, to be honest.
It's just a motion from the floor. It's not an amendment to the budget, and that's why Martha was saying don't tie it to the budget. It's just an amendment from the floor. I mean, or a resolution from the, a motion from the floor.
We're allowed to make motions from the floor, right?
Mike Lean?
Well, didn't we establish the recovery fund with an action of the board?
Resolution? We had a resolution.
So I think you'd have to amend that resolution. You'd have to bring it back for reconsideration, in my view, or bring something else totally forward to replace it. I also wonder if we did this, and maybe Dan Nolan would be the person to ask, how does it affect the other figures in the budget if we now move that money back into the budget out of the AARP, or the recovery fund, I should say?
Madam Chair, I'll withdraw this and work this out so we can bring it to the next legislature meeting. And in fact, I don't think it affects the budget, because all we did was kind of say to ourselves, on this side tally over here, we're going to take this 130 and charge it against the 7 million. So, but I'll be happy to work on
and bring back a motion.
An emotion, yeah.
Okay. That would be correct, FYI. Or just for everyone's information, yes. What Martha said is correct.
All right, thank you.
Okay, yes, let's see.
Practical question for Lisa, though. In the meantime, we're soliciting an RFP for folks to respond to. And that, though it wasn't in the resolution, that the number changed there. So, again, up to allows for that level of flexibility if we want to change that. But there is something that's hitting the streets that could have, you know, an impact just with that number.
Mm-hmm. I would think it doesn't materially affect whether somebody's going to apply for that, respond to the RFP or anything, or what the scope of work is. So,
right, it doesn't. And even if we choose somebody, if the legislature chooses to increase that amount to $15 million, then, you know that's what happens.
I'll second that.
maybe. Okay. Deborah, it's still your committee.
Oh, I think I'm done.
Nothing else from budget?
Not that I can think of.
All right. Let's wrap up the rest of this. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Henry Granison, Chair.
We have not met since the last meeting, so no report.
Thank you. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We met, we haven't met since last legislature meeting. We will meet October 28th, Thursday, and I expect that we will continue the conversation about code enforcement. I think that C.J. Randall will be able to make that meeting, and I will be talking to TCOG that afternoon about the code enforcement issue. We'll hear from IAED for sure, and a number of other issues. I wanted to, if I can just take a second here, about a housing issue that's not directly related. I understand there have been some concerns floated around about the North Side project, the Ithaca Housing Authority's project, where they are sort of will be starting next year demolishing a number of housing, I can't remember the numbers offhand, 80 or some housing units, rebuilding those units and adding another, Leslie, can you remember the numbers? Okay, adding another quantity of housing units. I understand there have been some rumors going around that people are just being pushed out of their apartments and no help is being offered. That is absolutely not true.
It's untrue.
So people are getting hand carried like individual counseling and support and trying to figure out good alternatives so that they can move into at least comparable settings, at least comparable financial settings. At least one family has already been able to move to a house they're going to be buying. So And then they will all have the opportunity to move back into the new units if they would like. I've got more details. Anybody could contact Susan Landfried in our Housing Planning and Sustainability Department if they have concerns about it. But we understand the residents are feeling very well taken care of. Change is, you know, is tough. It'll be unsettling for a period, but given that, I think it's the long-term right thing to do, and people are getting the assistance they need to find housing in the meantime.
Thank you, Martha. That is my district. And I also just want to assure people that, sometimes you have to do things to improve the property that's been there for a number of years and trying to make things a better living conditions for folks. So nobody is being just displaced and left out in the streets. That is absolutely not true. So stop the rumors.
Okay. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you. Downtown, oh, my favorite guy, don't be jealous, my claim, but my favorite guy is about to speak. Downtown Facilities Committee, Dave McKenna, chair.
Is that because I supported your resolution?
Leslie, when I saw him first.
Thank you anyway. Hey, we met, Downtown Facilities met on October 14th, okay? And there was much discussion about what we're going to do on the Sears Street side of the Tioga property, Tioga Street property. In the end, it was pretty much decided that planning would go ahead and start initiating talks with INHS and Habitat, ultimately ending up with an RFEI, basically requesting information and interest in doing something with those particular pieces of property. Would be about three housing units along Sears Street. Trying to find out timeline and interest level when they could build it, basically, and so on and so forth, and what it was going to take to make it happen, because I don't believe they're going to do it completely on their own. So we're looking for permanently affordable for sale or for rent properties to be placed along that street. That's basically the gist of the meeting, and we'll see what Katie comes back with, and then we'll bring it to the legislature when we finally get it all hashed out. That's my report. We will meet again November 10th at 3 p.m. because Veterans Day is on our normal meeting day on Thursday, and so we're going to be there on the 10th instead. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions for Dave? All right. Moving on. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, chair.
Thank you, Leslyn. The Public Safety Committee will be meeting this Thursday, October 21st at 3:00. And I anticipate we're going to have a report from Michael Stitley on the Backup Emergency Operations Center that we had the resolution on the bonding for today. And so we're going to have a chance to have a discussion about that. We're also going to be considering a resolution in support of the Central Arraignment Plan. And this is a pretty interesting development that really came out of the pandemic. For years, the practice was if somebody was arrested, they would have to be arraigned in front of a judge in the specific court where the jurisdiction was. And we have 12 different criminal courts, and they sit at all different times. But you would then have arraignments happening at all hours of the day and night. And in my prior practice, when I was doing a fair amount of criminal defense work, I recall going in the middle of the night to arraignments, and you'd need to get a prosecutor there and the judge and the defendant and a bailiff and a clerk and have a 10-minute arraignment. During the pandemic, they allowed virtual arraignments. And that's coming to an end. The Office of Court Administration is allowing counties to present centralized arraignment plans, which is an in-person arraignment instead of the virtual online arraignments that occurred during the pandemic emergency order, but in a far more efficient way, where arraignments will occur twice a day at the sheriff's department with a rotating series of judges. So the judges know when they're going to be there. The district attorney and assigned counsel know when the arraignments are going to be. And perhaps most importantly, it allows police officers to leave a person they've arrested at the sheriff's department and they can get back on the road. Otherwise, they basically have to sit with the person until the arraignment can occur. So there's a real efficiency savings here. The one issue we have to make sure is that, particularly with bail reform, that we're not holding people who would otherwise be released for a substantial period of time. Part of the plan, I anticipate, will be a careful use of appearance tickets so that if somebody is not likely to get bail anyway, that they would not be held. At any rate, this is all going to be talked about on Thursday, and we're going to be considering a resolution in support of a centralized arraignment plan for Tompkins County, which is pretty exciting, frankly, from the criminal justice system side. Happy to try to answer any questions. So I just mentioned our jail population is at 36 today.
Thank you very much, Rich. I can see the excitement. Show up on Thursday to participate in the excitement. Bring your balloons. All right, moving on. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Thank you very much. We met Monday, that was yesterday, and we had a presentation from Jordan Clements from Unbroken Promise Initiative, and he talked about what this grassroots organization does in our community. They're working on economic development, combating community deterioration, resolving racial inequity, community and civic engagement, and they're really dabbling into a lot of things that are helping people that live on the West Side. We are very thankful to get an idea of what's happening with that organization. My guess is that they will probably be asking for some recovery funds whenever the application process opens up. We also passed four resolutions that were on consent agenda, and we received some for all of them. We accepted a lot of money yesterday, so that's always good. And our next meeting will be the third Monday in November.
All right, any questions for Shauna? Thank you. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Thank you. We had a very brief meeting before this legislature meeting to pass the resolution that's already been approved on the consent agenda for the contract for vending machines at the airport. Our next meeting is going to be October 21st. That's a Thursday at 9 a.m. here. And we'll be having, just like Rich, we're going to have a presentation on the emergency backup center. So if you want to come to our meeting or if you want to come to Rich's meeting, you're going to learn all the details you need to know about that. And I have one resolution that we haven't taken up yet.
Any questions to Mike and his report? All right, go ahead, Mike.
This is the resolution H, bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $6,315,000 in serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of various capital improvement projects at various county facilities. That's ID 10379, and I so move, and I'll say something briefly about it if I get a second.
I have a second, please.
Second.
Glenn Morey did.
I just want to say what this is the borrowing for the green improvements throughout the county, miscellaneous improvements.
Leslie. Just a quick question. I noticed there's about $1 million delta between this bond and the total of phase one for the green facilities program, and I'm wondering how we're funding that $1 million difference. And I might have missed it. I wish I had my whole binder here tonight, but I thought Lisa might know that.
Green facilities. Off the top of my head, without my binder, I can't say. Mm-hmm. We're funding $1 million from fund balance for green fleet, but not, I don't believe, for green facilities. I'll need to consult and let you know.
Well, I'll get back to you. Otherwise, bake sales. But Lisa will get back with the information. Any other questions for Mike? No? All right. Thank you, Mike. No? Oh, wait. No, we have to hold on the resolution.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Robertson?
Yes.
Oh?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. That carries unanimously.
That's all I have.
Thank you, Mike. Tompkins Intergovernmental Relations Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We met on October 12th. Our next meeting is November 9th at 10:30. I'm sorry. At the last meeting, we talked about redistricting. We have this resolution in your packet. I have signed up to testify at the October 25th public hearing for the Independent Redistricting Commission. The meeting that's the one on the southern tier. So hoping that we pass this resolution, this would be the basis of what I would testify to. At the meeting, we also had Assemblywoman Anna Kellis came again and was able to give us a whole lot of information on the Greenwich generating station and the cryptocurrency issue and the Bitcoin mining operation there. So we had a very good conversation about that. I am working on a letter that would go to the DEC. The comment period on Greenwich has applied for air and water permit, air and acid rain permits to be able to expand their use and expand their operations for Bitcoin mining. Right now is the comment period through this coming Friday on those permits, and there's been quite a bit of community opposition and testimony already. I will be working on a letter that I hope other legislators will sign, and I'll get that to people, I hope, tomorrow. We would have to send it in by Friday. So we didn't have time to do a resolution, although Anna has legislation that would put into place a moratorium on these kind of operations. And she said that could come later. Right now, this comment period is the time-sensitive issue. So I hope people will be able to respond and support that letter. So if there are no questions, I've got the resolution.
Any questions to Martha? Nope. Go ahead, Martha.
Thank you. And I'm going to read the title that's embarrassingly in here. You know, I took the resolution that we passed before and forgot to change the title. So this started the change. I have to read what's in here. Response to the draft maps of the 2021 Independent Redistricting Commission supporting process, follow the borders of Tompkins County. I'm so laughing.
Sorry, good.
I know. And place Tompkins County completely into one congressional district and one state senate district. And I, with a red face, move that motion.
ID 10440.
Yes.
May I have a second, please?
All right, and then my immediate next thing to do is to propose a revision of that title. The rest of the resolution is the same. the amendment to the title response, and I only realized this after I saw the legislature packet, so it's too late. Response to the draft maps of the 2021 Independent Redistricting Commission supporting the letters maps that keep Tompkins County intact.
And is that friendly to you, Deborah?
Oh, yes.
Well, it's friendly to you, Martha, and it's friendly to Deborah.
Okay.
And to the rest of us. Any discussion? All right. We like staying intact. Let's vote on it.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Betty Warren? No. Martha Robertson?
Yes. Leslie Show? Yes. Mike Sigler?
No.
I'm sorry?
No.
No? Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Leslie McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
12 ayes, 2 noes.
That carries. Anything else, Martha?
No, that's it. Thank you.
All right. There are no member filed resolutions. Let's take up the minutes of the previous meeting before we do a quick executive session. May I have someone move the minutes of October 5th? Move. Leslie, seconded by Ann Corman. Any changes, substantive changes to the minutes? Let's vote on them.
Yes.
Abe McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Moore?
Yes.
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 Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes. Yes.
Deborah Goff?
Can you hear me?
Penny Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann?
Annie?
Yes.
Leslie McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Dick Herrings, unfinished business. I see Dan's hand. Dan.
Yeah, I think I don't think it got announced today that the next meeting is not on our usual day.
Oh, you're right.
But I'm mentioning it. So instead of meeting on Tuesday, November 2nd, which is Election Day, the next county legislature meeting will be on Thursday, November 4th.
Thank you very much, Dan. I would have been here on November 2nd. I'm just kidding. But thank you. November 4th is the next meeting, and we'll make sure this, as Kathy always does, and the crew here, adequate announcement to the public. But thank you. There are no other unfinished business. I would like a motion to go into executive. Oh, Annie.
Listen. Yes, thank you. I just want to quickly mention people were a little bit fighting over Dave McKenna earlier, and I just wanted to say we share the town of Enfield representing it, and so that we will always have that. So there.
Whatever it is, I'm laughing at it, but I didn't hear it. Okay. Motion to go into executive session for the purposes of discussing personal issues related to negotiations. Moved by Leslie. May I have a second, please? Seconded by Shauna Black. And let's vote in going into executive session.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dick McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Maury?
Yes.
Yes. Bill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Leslie McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. We're in executive session. We're going to get things all shut down and then take a whopping 2 minutes in executive session.